The Bill Simmons Podcast, brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where you can find the rewatchables. We do them on Monday nights. We're doing One Day Movie Month this month for August. August is coming. RoboCop is going to be Monday. We're doing all bangers. It's going to be an all banger One Day Movie Month month, I think. I think it's going to be all bangers. Pretty confident in that one. But you can watch that on the Ringer Movies YouTube channel as well. I think RoboCop's on Amazon Prime for free if you want to go check it out. I was just in Chicago for 24 hours. I'm a little delirious. I'm too old to fly. I don't know how the NBA players do it. Flying back to Chicago, it's like 4 hours. Got up super early yesterday, then flew back today. But I was at the Sports Collectors Convention, looking for stuff really for the studio. I put it on my Instagram. I found one thing I was really excited about, this Bull Durham tobacco sign I got. But I got a couple other good things too. I'm going to do a studio tour on here. I'll do like 5 minutes explaining a lot of the choices, but it was really fun to go back to the collectors convention. I had not been since COVID, and it's just massive now. And weirdly, there's less eclectic stuff than ever, and just more old baseball cards from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I have no idea who's buying. Who under 40 years old is like out there looking for like a Stan Musial card? I don't get it. But I had a great time. I was looking for all kinds of things for the background for here, but just in general, I was looking for basketball cards. 10 minutes to go, I found this amazing item. Hold on. So this is from 1924. It's a Holy Cross football doll. I'm pretty sure it's not a voodoo doll. I'm not positive yet. We'll find out, I guess, if anything crazy happens to me. But it says HC, back when Holy Cross used to be really good at football. Found this with 10 minutes to go with the show. You never know. I got a bunch of good stuff, but this is obviously, I think I had this in the 80s. On the back, it has all the championships. This was the 86, my favorite team. Needless to say, I have a spot in the studio for it right behind the guest's head. It's going to be really good. Very fun to go to the collectors convention. The big piece I bought was this Bull Durham tobacco thing. You can see OJ, the OJ piece behind me. The juice is on the loose. So that's going to be a staple of the studio, but I wanted a couple more things like that. Anyway, thank you for your patience with the studio. I know it sounds a little echoey. We're going to work on all this. The lighting is going to be really good. We're in the exhibition season. I think by the time we get to football season, it's going to be absolutely awesome. So I'm excited about that. Less excited about the Boston Red Sox, who last time I checked had a chance to be like a pretty interesting playoff team with the amount of bats they have. Maybe they weren't going to win the World Series, but I really have enjoyed this season. Crochet, we have an ace. Roman Anthony, best young Red Sox player I think I've seen since Nomar Garcia-Para in 97. You might want to throw Mookie in there, but I don't even think Mookie was as confident as Roman Anthony is this first year. It's nuts. They just have Bregman's back. They have a likable team. Rafael has been really, he's cooled off a little bit, but he's been really good. But it's the kind of team where it's like, man, if this team got a number two starter, they'd be really, one more bullpen arm, they'd be really interesting. So what did they get? They got Steven Matz and Dustin May, who, the Dodgers, who are trying to win a World Series, would like, take them. The Red Sox were first in payroll in 2013, the second to last time they won the World Series. They were third in 2018. They're fifth in 2021, the last time they made a real playoff run. Since then, 12th, 11th, 18th, and 9th. Which doesn't make sense when you consider all the other teams that spend a lot of money are these big market teams that used to be like the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers. And, you know, on the other hand, this Fenway Sports Group, which owns, they own the Liverpool soccer, they own Penguins, a whole bunch of stuff. But Liverpool has just been buying. I mean, they're like a drunk guy at 2 a.m, just buying cheeseburgers and pizza, just buying everybody, trying to get everybody. And then the Red Sox get Dustin May and Steven Matz. I'm still going to watch this Red Sox team. You're not driving me away this time. The Mookie Betts, I lost 4 years of my Red Sox life, and you're not doing it again. I like watching these guys. You can try to drive me away. Terrible Red Sox owners. It's not going to work. I'm still here. One other thing I had for you. There's been some stuff written this week about the NBA's ambitious foray into Europe with the EuroLeague. The opportunity is that Real Madrid and FC Barcelona in the EuroLeague have not re-upped. They have their licensing deals expiring in 2026, and they're basically become free agents. Adam Silver's been intrigued by this forever. I feel like, and that there's been some reporting about this too, I feel like the league is cooling off on expansion for the NBA and kind of looking abroad at this Europe thing as a real opportunity. And Adam's out there with his crew meeting with all of these possible investors, with some soccer teams. Here's the opportunity. Paris, growing market with Wemby. London, completely untapped. Like, they don't even have like a regular EuroLeague team. They have to like play their way in with the results. There's these massive soccer clubs that want to grow their footprint in basketball. So you have that too. So what's the NBA offering? Well, from what I've heard and from what's been reported, it's probably a 10-team league, but they could get away with 8. Maybe you grow it to 12. You get a guaranteed spot in the league. You get the voting rights. You get better TV distribution, better sponsorship. You're not relegated. You don't have to worry about like, you know, that I think there's 12 teams in the EuroLeague that are in there, but there's another 6 that you can get bounced out or if you don't have a good season. And there would be some sort of link to the NBA, which I think is the key here. Their exhibition games, which they've already announced a bunch of them, Manchester City and Paris, London. Maybe a tournament. And I've heard a couple different ideas for this, and I don't even know if they've decided on what they want to do yet. But you could have, maybe in October, you have the three best NBA teams and the 3 best teams from this NBA EuroLeague. They have a little round robin. Maybe it's just champ versus champ, best of 3. Maybe it's something in February with all the best teams. There's some sort of synergy thing, and it goes beyond just we're going to have some regular season games over there and some exhibition games. I think big picture, 20 years from now, what does this look like? The leagues are probably a little more intertwined. Not too intertwined, but a little intertwined. So they are trying to lock down Real Madrid and FC Barcelona because they can get out of the EuroLeague next year. They have AC Milan, I think, pretty much on board. They're owned by Redbird, and they don't have a real hoops team attached. The Milan team is Olympia Milano, who's re-signed in the EuroLeague for the next 10 years. But so AC Milan, count them in some way. In Paris, you could have PSG, which is owned by the Qatar Sports Investments. Been reported all week that Silver met with them. Paris basketball won the 2024 Euro Cup, but isn't officially in the EuroLeague. Maybe you have both of them. London doesn't have as far as I could tell, they don't have a set in stone EuroLeague team. The London Lions is the best one. They're a little independent. They're owned by Tessinat, I think it's called, a tech company. But you could have the London Soccer, one of the Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, any of those, buy one of those teams and launch their own, or who knows. You also have Manchester City, which has to be mentioned because they're hosting this NBA game randomly. So I'm going to count them in as a possible one. Then you have the 2 Greek teams. Boy, I'm going to regret trying to say either of these names. Fenerbahce, Olympios, maybe I got them. Both of them have notoriously battled the EuroLeague over the years, so maybe one of those. You have Alba Berlin, which started this whole thing. They're on a 1-year Euro deal right now, and they said they'd join the NBA already. That kind of got the ball rolling. And then The Athletic today reported that 4 existing EuroLeague franchises, already mentioned Real Madrid, Barca Barcelona, Asvel, which is in France, and then an Istanbul team, could all be potential defectors. So I think this goes London, Madrid, Barcelona, Milan, Paris, Berlin, and Greece as your definite 7 that are in this. I think Adam has those 7 in his pocket and doesn't know who the Greece team is yet. Maybe you could add Tony Parker's French team. That's that Asvel. He's the president of it. You could add the Istanbul team. You could add Manchester City. All of a sudden, I'm at 10. Maybe there's an Israel team down the road. Maybe there's a 3rd Spain team. Who knows? But they could take this right away. And if you look at the way the EuroLeague is, where you basically have this ownership. It's called EuroLeague Commercial Assets. That's the company that runs the league. You have voting rights on league rules, financials, TV deals, etc. And then there's a B license that's a 1-year thing that you got to play your way in based on results. And then a C license that's like basically a wild card. They could challenge this. They could offer the sponsorship expertise, better TV deals. They could shoehorn some of the TV stuff into their things. They could do the schedule so that it complements the NBA schedule correctly. And I think this is going to be going. I honestly wouldn't be surprised that this was going in the 26-27 season. And what's really interesting about this, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that I felt like the NBA is drifting against expansion, which was a lock forever until they got $76 billion from the media deal. Then suddenly, you know, need the media money and the teams that, I mean, the owners don't need to give up the media money for expansion fees because they made so much. I think this is the apple of their eye right now. And I think that's why the reports are coming out this week. That's why Adam is very publicly meeting with all of these people, even though it's private, but it's not. Stuff's leaking out. And I think this is going to happen in a real way. And what's cool about it, I remember watching a bunch of Luka games when he was playing over there as a 17-year-old. I can't remember what team he was on. And the quality play was good. The crowds were great. It was FIFA, so the style of it was pretty neat. And it was a good enough product. It was just the players weren't quite good enough. And it still felt a little, not rinky-dinky, but just compared to the NBA, it just definitely felt second class. I think if you can move that up where it's somewhere between first class and second class, and then you could also be a place, this could be a place where you park some of your retiring players. It's like, oh, your last year, you're going to play for this team. And maybe you go there. Maybe they change the rules where you could get a little bit of an ownership stake if you go over for a year. They could do some things with this league that they can't do with the NBA. They could bend the rules and make it a little more European. I don't think they would do relegation with it, but some of the ownership stake stuff, there's a little bit of urgency with it just because of those two Spanish teams are coming up on their license agreement. I don't think this is a response to the Maverick Carter League that he's been trying to start that I talked about a couple months ago. That's a little bit of a different format. It's like an F1 thing. You move from city to city for 2 weeks. Nobody really seems to think they're going to be able to get the kind of talent that they're bragging that they could get. I just think they're going to get their legs cut off by this EuroLeague. And I think this is a really, really, really interesting wrinkle. Oh, I'm thinking about when I'm 75, could the NBA have like a 45-team league? Who the fuck knows? Will we be able to fly from LA to London in 3 hours? I don't know. Will you be watching me at a virtual hologram wondering why I'm still doing a podcast? Maybe. But keep an eye on all this. Read all of the stories. Joe Vardin had one in The Athletic today. Like, people are going to start reporting on this. Just follow this because there's a lot of money at stake. And I think it's a chance for them to weave in some soccer clubs, some Qatar money, some Saudi Arabia. Like, so, some of the stuff they can't really do with the NBA, they can do overseas. And I think it's notable. Okay, speaking of notable, Cody Rhodes is coming up in a second. And he was awesome. We hadn't done a podcast together before. He came to my house. We did it in the studio and we had a great time. So that's coming up next. Let's take a break and we'll do Pearl Jam and then Cody Rhodes. All right, we're taping this on a Monday. Cody Rhodes is here. We've never talked on a podcast. Nope. I feel like we're both members of the Bet on Yourself Club.
Yes.
You're like an all-time Bet on Yourself guy.
I feel you are too, though.
Yeah, but I mean, for you, you leave WWE and it's like, what's that guy doing? I remember seeing it from afar going, oh no, where's he? And then it couldn't have worked out better, but it was a Bet on Yourself staple.
I think part of me, though, was also like, oh no.
Well, you were married, right? But you didn't have a kid.
So I was married. It's very important that I was married. And to the story, because I would always tell people, hey, I'm the one Rhodes who saved his money. So I had 10 years with WWE. I'm good financially. I can make these swings and bet on myself and do this unprecedented stuff I'm going to try and do. But that wasn't entirely true. It became at one point a little bit more, ooh, we are going check to check. I just bought a house in Denton, Texas, the first house I'd actually bought 10 years into my wrestling career. And that's when I decided to see a buy. And where I was going and some of these shows I was doing, PWG in California, for example.
Yeah.
You have to want to be on PWG. It's not a matter of them paying you big money or anything like that. And then certain indies would pay great rates because you had the WWE name. But then if you wanted to keep going and come back, it was a whole...
You're flying to Japan too, right? You're doing some Japan stuff?
From here, because I ended up with New Japan. I would come in... I'd only come in for their big shows because they really loved like American cowboy wrestler. They'd bring me in. I had the WWE name. They had a lot of respect and reverence for my dad. I'd come in like once a month with Japan, and was such a fun experience. It's a different type of wrestling, very different style, and so much you can learn. I got to learn a great deal over there.
You flying coach over there?
No.
That's a lot.
Trying to be honest with myself here.
I say indie wrestler, like go just zooming down to Japan.
I think because you're very right in terms of indie wrestler, I was lucky that Atlanta was my home for so long.
Yeah.
10 years with WWE. So every status, at the greatest Delta status you could ever have. So right. I was always my global certificates is what I used. And sometimes you'd have to wait till you're literally... scan your boarding pass. And they told you, I think it's going to be you. There's 4 open. And my wife and I would actually do that at the time, just praying. Because the other option was a little brutal, for sure. Especially if you're wrestling the day you land.
So you did that. I forget what you called it. What was it called? The all-in one where you guaranteed, like, I'm going to sell 10,000. It felt like once you got the 10,000 fans right away to go to the show, I felt like you had momentum. Because I was falling on the dirt sheets. This Cody thing might actually, who knows? Who knows how this is going to go for this guy?
I think probably the two really large factors in it all, going into the All In, this was an independent show by itself. Ring of Honor helped us produce it. But I think the big factors for me was I had the list right when I left. And that was the list of places I wanted to go, things I wanted to do. Nobody had really ever...
I got nervous when you said you had a list because lists are very controversial now. I was like on the edge of my seat for a second.
This was just a list of opponents, list of places. And also nobody ever quits WWE. They quit you.
Especially in your early 30s.
Yeah.
That's really unusual.
And a legacy. I had a great relationship with most people. I had big moments up and down the card, and I just felt where I was at, it was time to move. But I had that list, and the whole purpose of it was to mobilize. Hey, I'm not lying to you when I said, hey, I can do really cool stuff and I can do it better, and I'm going to go here, I'm going to go here. And they were all over the map. So that was a huge piece of it. And the other part of it was that underground scene was forming with, you could just see it. For example, WrestleCon is this convention where it's a lot of legends, ex-WWE, independent talent, things of that nature. It will piggyback off of a big WWE event usually.
Yeah.
We'd go, a group of us, we'd go and notice we had a line around the hallway to the elevator, down the stairs and out the door. And then we'd see one of the legends, God bless him, not have that same effect. So there was just this general underground rumbling that was happening. That's why when the bet came up, somebody saying, hey, nobody can draw 10,000 in America other than WWE, it had been true up until that point. And I think fans felt they wanted to be in on that journey with us. The only way I can describe that original event was it just felt like Woodstock. Every piece of it. It was just, we didn't know what we were doing, but we were going to fake it. We were going to fake it till we make it. And the event, I mean,
you had some talented people involved too. I mean, that was the other thing. There's this whole class of whatever we're calling this era of wrestling.
Oh,
which I'm scared constantly for everybody involved, mainly because I'm old.
In terms of the physical, what you're seeing them do?
Yeah, because I just, and this has been, we're going back almost 25, 30 years here, but you just keep raising the bar and raising the bar and raising the bar with the stunts. I mean, Mankind was what, late 90s, early 2000s, going through the cage?
Going through the cage and off the cage.
The tooth coming through his nose. But there's come some point where it's like, I don't know if we can go any higher, guys, on the on the ladder jump. And I don't know, it felt like we were hitting it.
In terms of sports and sports entertainment, I feel like one of the things about our game is the danger has just continued to go up in terms of high spots and physical things that you're seeing and unbelievable acrobatics and real Cirque style motions, but it's just evolved that way. It's really at the Nightmare Factory, for example, we get so many kids who can do a 630, who can do a Sasuke special. We do so, and it's really great. Once they have that, awesome, keep it. You will need it. You know, you'll hear people today say it's not about the moves, it's about the moments. And then you'll hear kind of the old timers talk about storytelling versus the action itself. And the actual truth is it's right in the middle. It's really right in the middle. The modern audience has seen what can be done. And I think that right now, WWE is probably at its absolute best. And if they don't know why they're at their absolute best, that to me is one of the reasons why. You've got the king of storytelling, in a sense, with, say, a Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
King of storytelling. And you've got a Mr. Heyman behind the scenes and Triple H at the helm. But then you also have guys who are just so unbelievably, if you give them the time, which Triple H gives them the time to go out there and do something physical and impress and steal the spotlight and take it. There's a lot of really special folks. Like, for example, Mexico. We were just talking about Mexico City, Monterrey. I had two shows this weekend. WWE now works, you know, we're overseeing AAA or however we're putting it, but that's part of the WWE family now. And to see their level of talent and lucha libre skills in the ring, which is, again, next level. Two people who are on All In for Pentagon, Phoenix, both of them with WWE now. So to have it all seems to be the ticket to success in the wrestling industry and keeping it successful.
I'm trying to think of the levels to this. Because like, I remember when Snuka was, when he was jumping off the top rope. And by the way, we didn't have YouTube back then. So when he jumped off the top of the steel cage, which I saw, I thought it was like 25 feet. It was like, I don't know, 10. In your head, it was 25.
Yeah.
But he was one of the first ones, Macho Man, and people got a little more airborne. But it really felt like the Hardy Brothers, those guys, when they started pushing in the 2000s. But then we've had this other level of it in the last 10 years where I'm just scared the whole time. I remember thinking like a pile driver seemed scary. Although that's basically mostly been outlawed, right? The pile driver?
It was outlawed actually at WWE up until Kevin Owens hit me with a package pile driver.
That was unfair of him.
Post the original, our return to Saturday Night's Main Event, which...
which, by the way, was laid out in this Netflix show, which was incredible.
Which you've seen and I've not seen.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's...
unreal?
We have not... I know WWE has been saying it's an unprecedented look into our industry.
Certainly unprecedented.
Apparently it is, because I haven't seen it. I keep hearing it's a really great episode, and they really did dig in there and show a different side, or a side people haven't
hoarding
seen
it from you.
Of I don't know what they're afraid of, but I think it's going to be great. I've heard good things. What did you think?
I mean, I had heard we were going behind the curtain. I was like, yeah, right. It's behind the curtain.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it really is. Like, especially talking about the Cena heel turn is like almost a whole episode. And just how that's laid out and whose idea it was, how they kept it a secret.
Oh, man.
And
I'm intrigued. You know,
I was surprised. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of people know this anyway. So you're lifting the veil off for very few people. I thought it was really neat. I actually thought it was... it was the stuff I'd always wondered about, but never knew.
Yeah.
And then you get to, it gave me a new respect for like how much thought you have to put into every aspect of the behind the scenes stuff.
Maybe that's the goal. I know when I...
You sound like down on it.
No. Gosh, for me, my whole outlook on it has been seeing these people in a different light, not Rhea Ripley out there in the ring, not CM Punk out there, or myself. My whole thought process is if that's endearing to a completely new audience that now wants to come and check out what they do, you know, what we do and see it. For example, if you come to a WrestleMania, if you come to a SummerSlam, you're going to be a wrestling fan for life. Usually there's always something.
Well, there's the stages. How old are you have one kid or two?
Two. No, one. I'm sorry. One. Sorry. I don't know why I said two.
How old is your kid?
Four.
Yeah. Yeah. So six is, it's like between five and a half and six. That's when it gets you.
She's been, she came WrestleMania when we were in SoFi.
Yeah.
She was just because it was pre-bedtime, because it was West Coast show, so it ran earlier. That's probably my favorite photo ever because I got to go see her, have a moment with her, and just this great photo in front of 70, 80,000 something people right before the first WrestleMania main event I ever got to do. Yeah, it was really special. But Unreal, my whole thought process is for new fans that don't know, and then they see somebody like Rhea Ripley, for example, or Punk, and they want to follow them into the actual, now I'll watch the actual show. That's how I've always thought it would be a good thing. The veil has been lifted a long time. Certainly there's parts of it that haven't been seen, but kayfabe does not mean what kayfabe used to mean.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I'll give you $1,000 if you can tell me what kayfabe means. If you can actually tell me, because it's a one word definition and nobody ever gets it. But to me, it's all about capturing a new audience, because I feel the hardcore wrestling fan is, they're pretty much like myself. We're going through it. I've watched my whole life. I love it. I'll continue to watch.
There comes a point where you're either in or out.
Yeah. And I
don't know what age it is, but it's just you're either at some point. Having kids helps because it kind of regenerates a lot of it.
Having you know, Liberty's only 4, but just seeing her react to like a Bianca Belair.
Yeah.
Because we put Bianca in Clash of Clans as like a skin crossover where you can make the character look like Bianca, and seeing her emulate the hair whip and sing the song a little, very much opened my eyes to, I take it so seriously and try to get so nuanced and deep with pro wrestling and the story I want to tell that night in the ring.
Yeah.
It's sometimes not that deep. Sometimes it's just big, bombastic fun. Like,
but that's what was interesting about this show. So I watched, I was with my son. My son's 17. He got sucked in around age 5.
Okay.
And my wife and daughter were at a concert. So it was just us. And I got the screener. I'm like, let's watch one of these, see if it's good. And we're watching and we're all in. We watch all 5. But it was the little stuff like Bianca Belair was asking, I think it was Rhea Ripley. Like she's like, I really loaded up my ponytail tonight. You good with crack. That?
Yeah, yeah.
And Rhea was like, no, I'm okay. And she's like, I'm telling you, it's like really heavy tonight. Just be ready. And it's like little stuff like that where I was like, wow, that's really interesting that she's worried about the effect of... But that's just the kind of stuff you wouldn't think about when you're watching this.
Yeah, also too, Rhea Ripley probably totally fine with it, because most wrestlers I know have a weird sense of like,
bring it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. It's so toxic.
Yeah.
For example, Cena turning on me, my hands aren't up once on those belt shots. And by standards today, it's like, please put your hands up, please. It's just this weird alpha toxic, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but I think.
Well, you had the craziest one. What did your pectoral ripped off your.
Yeah. This guy over here just went.
And you just said, fuck it. And you wrestled Hell in the Cell.
I did.
And you had like, it was kind of gross. It was your whole side of your body was purple. Had no idea how hurt you were, but obviously you were really hurt, but what you could do. And it was kind of an amazing match.
It's I think the idea, so many lies went into making it so that I could get in that ring that night. Cause I was just refusing to do old school. Hey, let me be laying there backstage. And who did it?
You get hit by somebody driving a van with a COVID mask on.
It was the first main event I'd had with WWE, and Peacock had a bunch of like subs went up on it, and they had told me that, and it was Hell in the Cell with Seth Rollins. This is spinning out of my coming back at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I screwed up the backstory. This was like your big moment.
So yeah, I'm back, and what I said all along is, hey, I can be in the main event. I can handle it, and I can be in it, and I can do well for you guys. So this was my first main event, and here I am. Oh, I'm going to have to go away. I wanted to at least give them something to remember me by. And
is that some son of a wrestler shit though? Like where?
Oh, big time.
You kind of grew up in the world and you just kind of understand differently that there's a different level of respect with going through an injury like that.
But here's the thing. It's son of a wrestler for sure. However, had my dad been alive, he wouldn't have let me wrestle.
Really?
Because my dad didn't look at me like a wrestler. My dad wanted me to be an actor and thought I was...
You're like Michael Corleone? He disappointed you had the family business.
He was very happy when I got into it, but my dad just babied. I'm the baby of my family, severely babied me and just took care of me in the greatest way. To me, greatest dad ever. But if all the other old school wrestlers were like, yeah, That's it right there. That's old school. All of he would have been the one to be like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Why did you do that? So part of it was old school wrestler. And really, again, like I said, I lied on the way. I kept it so... The information was true. WWE's doctors looked at me and said, he can't hurt it any worse. That was true. Couldn't hurt it any worse. But also...
But it didn't mean it hurt.
I was like, oh, I'm good. And was there a moment
15 minutes in where you're like, shoot me in the head. This is the worst idea I've ever had.
It's probably 2 minutes in.
Okay.
Because I hadn't done anything. And so it detaches here by my armpit.
Yeah.
But the other part is connected to your collarbone, right? So when the detach here, it just falls. There's nothing there anymore. However, it would cramp up into the collarbone spot. So anytime you did anything, it would cramp up. It was giant. It literally is sticking out this much. And when that happened, it hurt more than anything.
Did you feel like your collarbone was just going to come out of your body?
Explode. Yeah. You're going to literally explode. That was the only thing for me where I thought, oof. And also everyone was under the impression, oh, they're going to go like 6 minutes. It's fine. It's not going to be much.
That match was awesome.
You're in there with Seth Rollins. There's nobody better. And we got like 25 minutes. There's tables involved. He pulls out a toolbox at one point. Hidden. We just went for it. Because again, wanted them to have something to remember me by. I hate saying it, but I was really ashamed. I'd never been hurt.
Yeah.
And then I finally got to the spot and I got hurt. He's in here, and you know Nick and Triple H and all these guys saying, hey, you're right, Cody. We're going to go all in on you now. And then I felt like I'd blown it. So I wasn't going to leave that spot that night without at least leaving a very large mark on hopefully the fans.
Yeah, you're like, I've come this far. This is
a
7-year odyssey to get back here to this moment. I'm not leaving now.
I think in my documentary, I said it's a peck well spent. You know, like it's just a peck. And you know something crazy about the peck surgery? Dr. Dugas did my surgery, and he's done like so many great athletes and wrestlers. But right before the surgery, he goes, you know, this is mainly a cosmetic surgery. And I said, what? He goes, yeah, plenty of people don't repair it and they aren't fine. I'm like, I don't want to sit out for 6 months for cosmetics reasons. And then the next, you know, you're out and like, I'm like, well, no.
He's just trying to make you feel better.
I think he was, because I was like, I don't know. I was told this was very serious, sir. But yeah, he said that right before it happened.
You're healthy now though, right?
Yeah. That's the only injury I've had the entire time I've been doing this.
Because you're right. You're right in that wrestler prime. Wrestler prime's like...
Do you know the exact age?
I would say it's like late 30s into like the 42, 43 range. Because you have enough, I would say enough experience.
It's 35 to 42.
Yeah.
You hit it.
Yeah.
And now
your mic skills are going to be the best they've ever been.
35 to 40. You nailed it though.
But it's like, it's honestly like a stand-up comedian or something. If you're a stand-up comedian, you're going to clubs for 10 years, perfecting how to feel in front of whatever crowd you're doing, how to have hecklers bounce off you, everything. And then you kind of figure out who you are and what your act is.
The big thing is who you are and how you can handle every situation and what you do is stand-up comedy is such a great parallel, because what you do in a live setting. We were in Mexico City 2 nights ago, and we did this spot where bad guys are beating up my partner on the outside. Mm. And they did it so many times that I used to watch Undertaker do this thing when I was the bad guy. Undertaker come down on the floor, he'd snap the chair together where the whole crowd could hear it. So just the acoustic of, oh, and then he'd chase us around the ring, but nothing actually happened.
Yeah.
It was such a less is more situation. And I got to do it the other night, and it was just something that we felt in the moment and trusted the crew would know what's happening. You hear that chair, you better run.
Yeah.
Otherwise I have to hit you with it. And I felt so great because he actually was there at the show watching it. So like, all right. We've passed on this knowledge and we can do things like that now, you know?
There's two ways wrestling's gotten better since the heyday of your dad, one of the great wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
I don't know where he ranks in. See, if we had like first take for wrestling, we would just constantly argue about, is this guy better than Dusty Rhodes? Where does he rank between Hogan and...
I feel like I want to pull every time media... A lot of the really great media moments that you'll go on and talking to really excellent people always ask the question, what's your Mount Rushmore? And
I don't like it.
I don't think people realize I basically say a different one each time. I'm waiting for someone to be like, oh, this guy's full of shit.
So you just do a different four. Yeah, that's a good one.
Because
I like that.
Because How can you do that? There's so many eras of wrestling, so many different. And when hardcore fans start breaking in on technical stills, on promos, I guess that's better than just saying, here's the four. And then you get into the situation where it's, you just have to be really generic and be like, well, pro wrestling is about drawing money. So, okay, here they are. We've heard those four before, you know, like it's,
you know what it's like? Yeah. It's like actors are like this. Cause in basketball, it's easier because you actually can come up with a list that's going to look mostly like somebody else's list, right? LeBron and Jordan and Russell. And there's like certain guys at the top. I think when I think about wrestling lists or actor lists or comedian lists, it's almost more like who, if you start talking about it, who has to be, at least in the conversation as you're talking about it. And it doesn't have to be like 7, 4, 10. But like Hogan clearly has to be on it, right? Stone Cold, your dad.
So it's so funny.
It's like a short list, but you kind of know who's on the list. Right. And everybody's list can be different, but everybody's going to have the same five people.
I just did, there's a documentary on Hogan that was coming out, and I did the interview a month ago, and I actually kept saying, I'm like, well, from the business standpoint, you're one and twos of that time period up until recently, the one and twos were very clearly Hulk, Steve Austin. So you could interchange them. And up until recently, because we've been blessed that we're breaking all these records. So we'll see how.
If you're talking about one guy just selling out arenas everywhere who has a dramatic impact and it didn't matter whether they have the title or not. See, Andre has to be on that too. Because Andre didn't even need the title.
So you're probably definitely right with Andre. The only issue with Andre, it's a similar issue I find with my father, is the data isn't there succinctly. You know, Meltzer certainly tries to do a good job putting data together. Shoemaker, a lot of people can look at it, but so much of it is lore. And so much of it is fantasy. Oh, there were 60,000 people. There probably was. But now we're really, I mean, the fire marshal is going to tell you how many tickets we actually sold. It's way easier to track now these days. And so I feel like a lot of it gets lost to the lore. And part of me, if you've ever seen the movie Big Fish, where if Big Fish is, that's like my childhood. It's a great movie.
Who's in that? It sounds familiar.
Big Fish is Ewan McGregor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Is it Ewan McGregor? I'm sitting here saying it's one of my favorite movies. Yeah. But the end is that's the moral, is all these tales he heard growing up that he thought, well, they're just tales. And then at the, you know, not to spoil it for anybody, but at the funeral, you find out, oh my gosh, so many of these things were real. So I like to think, like Andre, you're probably very right. And Andre, certainly I've got books in my basement, booking journals. From late 70s, early 80s. Stuff. Yeah, great stuff. And if you flip them open, there's the card. There's how much money they made. There's how much they made the last time. And then typically on some of these, it will say Andre coming in, Battle Royal. And then you'll flip to where next year, Andre, and always up. Always up. Yeah. He truly was, you had to come and see him. You know, and Gorgeous George was the first ever to do that.
And San Martino was like that in the 70s.
Oh my gosh, too. Yeah. Bruno.
There's some people that had really nice short runs though. Like I still feel like Sergeant Slaughter and Iron Sheik was one of the great feuds of the entire last 50 years of WWE. And it was only like 3-4 months, but it really mattered. And the crowds went absolutely fucking bonkers with the USA versus Iran stuff.
Sergeant Slaughter is, I feel, really underrated.
100%.
He's got a street fight with Pat Patterson in the Garden.
Oh, it was like match of the year.
Yeah, and you have to, if I told my students about that today, they'd no clue. Even the people I'm talking about, they wouldn't know Pat. I don't think they'd know Sarge, but I do have a selfish little Sarge moment that you would be the first person I've shared it with, but it was, I mean, it gave me goosebumps. Unbelievable. Made me feel so good. And also made me feel like, oh man, I hope he's right. But we're standing there for the 10 bell salute for the Hulkster.
Yeah.
And I'm standing next to Sarge.
And I saw him out there. I was excited to see him. Yeah.
And he's standing next to me. And afterwards, they're playing the video package. And, you know, we're just out there. And I shook his hand, shook Hunter's hand. And he said something to me. I didn't really hear it. And I think I just said like, oh, yeah. Just kind of like, and then I heard him. And he goes, no, carry the ball. And I thought, I mean, it made me feel like 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
I had a promo later that night and I'm thinking, I got to go. Sarge just told me, carry the ball. I better not let him down. I was so excited. I got to hang out with the legends a little bit that day. And I know the circumstances were somber, but to just be around Jimmy Hart.
Right.
Yeah. To be around Sarge, Hacksaw, who I, God bless, love Hacksaw Jim Duggan. That was really nice to be around.
Too. Yeah, yeah, I was saying, we got sidetracked. I sidetracked myself. I was talking about the two ways wrestling's different now versus then. Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's one is the moves and the athleticism, which we talked about. And then the other is the entrances are all great now.
Yeah.
When you go back and you watch the old ones, because I was thinking about that with Hogan when he had Eye of the Tiger and it was one of the first great entrances.
Yeah.
The Freebirds had, Leonard Skinner?
Well, they were the first to have music, yeah.
Yeah. So it was very early on, only a couple.
Yeah.
Macho Man had the big grand
pomp and circumstance. Yeah.
But now it's like everybody, and a lot of them are designed for the crowd to be able to sing along at some point in the song, which you have.
Yeah. They didn't sing along. I had that song forever.
Yeah.
And now they do.
Now they get it.
Yeah.
But that's how I think those are the two ways wrestling's better in HD.
So the songs, and Randy was talking about this the other day, Randy Orton, because they sing his song like word for word now.
And it's hilarious.
It's new to him.
Yeah.
And he was talking with me about it. And one of the things, though, about it is it's really old school, actually. Even though there wasn't music then.
Yeah.
The whole point of what we're doing, and I don't know if Unreal points this out, and I bet you it does, is we're trying to connect with them. It's not completely sport. It's not completely entertainment. None of it functions, though, without them caring. That's the whole thing. You know, John Cena's rule. If they start making noise, he's coming up. He's going to fight back. To see your guy, see your girl, and then you do a thing. So usually it was something that affected the matches. We'll cheer for such and such in the matches. We'll cheer against such and such in the match.
Yeah.
Now it's, we come, we sing the song. We say, whoa, we do the yeet. That is as old school as it gets, actually. It's just done in a very new package because the entrances are so highly produced and part of it now. But
I remember Road Dogg, Jesse James,
and
Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
When wrestling made its big comeback for the WWE after WCW was kicking its ass. But those guys would come in and do the entrance and sing the song. And the crowd lost their mind.
Oh, you didn't know. You didn't know.
It was like, they didn't even need to wrestle. It was so good. It was like, well, I'm just here to do this and sing with you guys.
So if you were wrestling me tonight and I came out and the crowd was really receptive to Kingdom, the song, and they were woeing like crazy, and then they started the soccer chants, the Cody Rhodes chants, I'd probably tell you, just kick me in the gut. I don't need to do, they seem good with
me. I'm good.
They seem good with me. Kick me in the gut and let them boo you and we'll just see how long it goes, you know, just because that it becomes part of your match now.
Well, when Punk came back finally to WWE after 72 years of sitting out.
A long time.
But first time when he walked in and the crowd was just going nuts and singing his song and he almost didn't know what to do. You could just see he was like delirious. Like it almost seems like you pass out.
Yeah.
It must be a pretty cool feeling.
It's a pretty cool feeling and Punk's had more experience with this feeling than I have, but I feel like, and this is something I was just talking about, one of my favorite wrestlers told me as things started to take off for me.
Yeah.
He said, and this is right around WrestleMania 39, 40, right there in the spot. And he told me that you're on the treadmill now. The reactions are going to be through the roof. It's always going to, don't take it for granted.
Right.
Remember the first time that they went nuts and treat every time like it's the first time that they went nuts. And it shocks me how right he was as far as when you find this, whatever this elusive thing is that they like about you, it's the most beautiful thing ever because then all the flips and the dangerous stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you do it, it matters so much more. Like that's why this discussion about moves over moments. No, and that's not the discussion. If you have that connection and you do that really cool thing they like to see, that's box office and that's real. That's the whole thing. And cause you mentioned Unreal. Now I really want to see this episode. I think
I'm taunting you that I saw Unreal, right?
You've seen it. You've seen all five.
Yeah, I saw all of them.
I think one of the things that presents itself for wrestlers that hardcore fans may not be thinking, but the really smart super geniuses, as I call them, you know, your Michael Hayes's and your Mr. Heymans. There's work that can happen within the work.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, this is all real, this is, look at this, then it starts to become hard to figure out, that part's real. And that's where you can do work within the work. So yeah. You can still, again, the word that no one can ever tell me what it means. You can still do kayfabe. You really can. It's just different. And that's the fun experiment we get to take as we lift this veil, but we cover this thing up. I don't know. You know, I think it presents options that wrestlers and maybe the hardcore fans who are a little worried about, oh no, they're going to expose it all. Yeah, maybe we expose this part, but right. Maybe there's a whole other part you didn't see.
Yeah, but think about like, what was that documentary they did about Bret Hart?
Wrestling with Shadows?
One of the greats. Which we cribbed some of that for the Vince McMahon doc, but the behind the scenes stuff of them being mad after the match.
Yeah.
That was like, holy shit, I can't believe somebody filmed this.
So here's my question for you. Do you think that was a documentary or do you think that was part of it? So
it sounds like you have a theory on this.
Whenever I tell somebody high level confidential stuff, I use Chris, who's in the corner, has probably heard me say this. I say Brett Shawn level. I've never heard from either that it wasn't as real as it possibly could get. And maybe it was. It certainly ended up being real, no doubt. However, I have questions. There was a documentary crew backstage at a company that never, ever allows anything like that. There's mics in the room.
This is amazing. Conspiracy. You've just activated conspiracy, but, Bill. He's about to take off his sweatshirt.
This, to me, is always the work within the work. And Shawn Michaels was my favorite wrestler growing up. And I'm probably sitting here making him mad. He's still my favorite wrestler.
Yeah.
But then you get to him and Hogan when they wrestled at SummerSlam. And they're like, oh, you can tell he's mad at Hogan.
Oh, when he was overselling all the moves.
Right. Yeah. But is he? Or does this just seem like the one real thing on the show where you knew everything else was fictional?
Two things that would be countered. Conspiracy Bill loves this. The loogie that Vince McMahon spat at, or Bret Hart spat at him, at Vince was disgusting and looked like a giant oyster.
Hit him
nailed
too.
Vince. Mm-hmm. That's the worst bump Vince has ever taken, if that was a bump. Second, Vince did get cold cocked and wobbled out and had a black eye.
Yeah.
I don't know how they would have faked that one.
Well, it's pro wrestling. You wouldn't have faked it.
Right.
Was talking like if it, again.
So if the whole thing was a work from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Then part of it is he has to hit
it. We're talking about, you saw Rhea and Bianca talking about, there's no way to pull that. It's coming. It's coming. And I mean,
this is great. You really blew my mind with this one. Yeah, I wasn't prepared. I don't even want to do the podcast anymore. I just want to go on Reddit.
So growing up around my dad, I always, when something would happen on TV that felt like a shoot, as we say.
Yeah.
I'd be sitting literally front of the TV, as they say, like what, crisscross applesauce or whatever, watching the TV. I have my Hasbro figures, even though I was way too old to have figures at that point. I'm watching and he'd be behind me and I'd always look back like, oh, some, and he just always smile ear to ear. And I felt like in that smile, I could tell he knew they were doing some high level work and the whole world was doing exactly what they needed to do. And I was like his litmus test. I was his test on, because we're talking about Shawn again, and I don't mean to, I loved Shawn so much, but he didn't understand why I liked Shawn Michaels, because he was past his run. He was just dad.
Yeah.
That's
funny. He was like critiquing some of your choices.
So he'd never take my joy away though. He'd always ask like, what do you like about him? Oh my, are you kidding? Look at him. He's smaller and leaner, but he's jacked and he's able to wrestle these big guys.
Yeah.
And are you kidding? All the chicks like him. And like, the whole, and he never tell me otherwise. He just, And then I remember WrestleMania 12, Brett Shawn, they go the hour and I'm so disappointed. Like my guy didn't win again.
Yeah.
Again. And then, oh, here comes, they're going to go 15 more minutes. And again, I looked at my dad, smile ear to ear. And I thought, They got me. And they just, I don't know. These could all be conspiracy theory. They could all be true. They could all be total shoots. They really could. But the way I look at it is anything and everything that happens in the ring, I always look at it with a, Well, one that of the, feels like it was part of it.
One of the best ones ever was CM Punk when he sat down cross-legged.
Oh, the pipe bomb.
And went after Cena in a real way, and then people were mad. And I still don't know how much of that was real and how much of it was talked about beforehand.
I like with the pipe bomb, for example, I always, even though we're getting into it now, I actually, if it's so good, I almost don't want to know.
Right?
If it's so good, the rest of that show, oh, that seemed normal, but this, they're going to a place I wasn't expecting, then I don't need to know. It's like the magic. You know,
what was your first one? Because my first one was when Killer Khan broke Andre the Giant's leg, and then they got a whole thing about it, and then finding out way later when we're working in the documentary that it was actually an accident. Killer Khan felt really bad. And it was like, oh man, why'd they ruin this for me? Gosh. I thought I did it intentionally.
I don't know if I had I know, for example, Sting got his ribs broken by Vader in the strap match.
Oh.
But after I saw him and he was good, normal, but he was also leaving for a while. And then I asked my dad in the car, like,
he had to leave for a while anyway. Yeah. So injury.
I asked my dad for a while, well, what's happened? You know, what will he do? He's like, oh, he's just going to drink milk and the bones will heal. It was just a terrible answer.
They come back.
So yeah. So I'd get to the shows as a kid. Doug Dillinger, who was just on TV the other night, WCW's famous security guard, used to knock on Goldberg's door.
Yeah.
Doug was like my guy. He'd always print me this oversized laminated backstage pass. And I'd never want to be backstage. I wanted to go sit. I'd go find an empty seat. And I wanted to see. I just didn't care for the mystery of it. Because I could tell there's something off. Like all these guys are shaking Dusty's hand and they're playing cards. Something's off. But I didn't want to know. It's still magic.
You know,
to me.
It was a tough one in the mid-80s was when Hacksaw Jim Duggan and I think it was the Iron Sheik got pulled over together. That was in high school. And I was like, why were those guys together? One of them must not have had a car and maybe the other guy was giving him a favor.
You give yourself all the reasons.
I was trying to justify it in my head. So you missed, I mean, obviously because you were too young, but you missed when Dusty's apex.
So most of Dusty's prime is me watching it on VHS.
Right.
I didn't know.
Because I missed most of it too, because I was in the WWF part of
territory,
the country.
Yeah.
And you'd see him sometimes. And the week to week stuff that made him so great. It was one of the best mic guys ever.
I didn't know how over Dusty was until we did a show. WCW did a show at the Omni in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And he was the executive producer. And I was 8. I mean, at that point, I should have started to figure things out. But Sting went out the back door to go to his car. And as we went to step behind him, my dad kind of threw his hand in front of me. He's like, just give him a second. Give him a second. It was strange. And they reacted like crazy for Sting. And I'm thinking like, that's so cool, man. Look at that. All the fans out there. What a cool job.
Oh, because he knew.
And then my dad went out there.
Yeah.
And these people lost their minds.
Yeah.
And I, Dusty. And I just like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I get choked up about it, thinking about it today. I couldn't believe, like, what? Like, tell me more. Because we lived in this really snooty part of Georgia, East Cobb. It was like Laguna Beach without the beach. So the wrestlers, my dad, we were like the Adams family. He'd mow the lawn in his DR trunks with Ray-Bans that his head was too big for that are like pulled into the side of his head, the bleach blonde hair, and Gabe Simpson, from the Braves was on the other side of the neighborhood. And he was like the real sports guy. And then we were the goofy entertainment side of the other neighborhood. But I just didn't know because parents would ask me about my dad and I had no clue. And then I start looking into our own VHSs and old school reels and all this stuff, seeing the Florida stuff, seeing all the Crockett stuff.
Yeah, because it's not like baseball or something where you just look up his stats on Baseball Reference and be like, dad hit 400?
It really was Atlanta, the city, you know, Omni and I don't go there anymore, but Lenox Mall. Man, he'd walk into Lenox Mall and I mean, a riot would start. Going to Atlanta, Hartsfield-Jackson, the airport, all the Delta Redcoats rushing.
I mean, no shots fired at Atlanta, but you could argue he's the best champion they've had in the last 50 years. The sports teams haven't done great.
It's a tricky sport.
It's a little tricky.
I'm a Dawgs fan. So It's always good to cheer for the dogs. Always good. Listen, the Braves are going to do okay.
But you have a weird pro. What's your pro football team? You have something weird.
I'm an Eagles guy. Currently.
Yeah, I didn't get that part.
So it's real easy, and you'll be like, I am college football. This is my favorite thing. Love college football. Was so pumped when Joe Tess came to do commentary because I've listened to him 100 times. But pro football is my sister cheered for the Cowboys. My oldest sister. Love the Cowboys because my family was all Texans, really minus me.
Yeah.
So I'm like a fake Texan, kind of. Okay. But by the time I was older, the Cowboys weren't the Cowboys like that anymore. The Falcons...
Are you fair-weathered it?
Oh, I continue to fair-weather. This is how easy I am. The Falcons, as a kid, not great. Jamal Anderson doing the Dirty Bird.
There you were.
Places losing their mind. I'm in. I'm a Falcons fan. Doesn't go the way we think. Okay.
You auditioned a new team?
Yeah. So Michael Vick shows up. Michael Vick, season tickets sell out. Michael Vick, number 7, jerseys everywhere. It's Michael Vick. That goes really terribly poorly.
To say the least.
And then really did lose a lot of the franchise. Then, okay, Matty Ice makes it to the Super Bowl. Okay. All right. Arthur Blank's on the field. Okay. It's, And it's at that point.
You get the helmet behind you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, but you're gonna hate everything about what I'm gonna say. That's at that point where I just said, if Atlanta gets there, I'll be there. But I'm not against them, but I'm really not gonna get on the four of them train. So Tom Brady becomes my favorite quarterback.
Okay.
Okay. So Tom, I go to the COVID Super Bowl just to see him throw the ball one time when he's with Tampa Bay, which is an amazing story. One season and they win a Super Bowl, whatever it may be. But this is how easy I am. I go to do media for WrestleMania 40 at the stadium for Philly. And this is a massive, massive sports franchise.
Yeah.
They rolled out the red carpet for me. They let me have a room in the stadium. They had all this media coming in. They gave me all these jerseys and they gave me all this stuff for my daughter. An eagle, all this. That moment.
Kids' gifts.
Kids' gifts are
a great way to steal somebody. 100%.
And I knew I was going to be wrestling in the center of that field.
Yeah.
The next year. I had a feeling, I was betting on myself, but praying too. I had a feeling I was going to be in the main event.
Yeah.
So forever, the city of Philadelphia, because Wells Fargo is actually my favorite arena, which is right in the sports complex there. That's my wrestling other hometown is Philly.
You know who I feel bad for? The 7 NFL teams you didn't root for.
Yeah, well,
during the course of that journey.
Well, I really wanted to root for a lot of people, but listen, it's like wrestling. You get behind somebody, you got to win. And a winning season would work for me. You just got to win. But yeah, Philly, they became my team.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what wrestler I've stayed loyal to the entire time.
You do
usually bounce around.
Yeah. Shane Gillis, the comedian, he's a big Phillies guy. I mean, an Eagles guy. He came backstage and he's all Eagles up. And I think it's on record now that I'm on board with the Eagles. That's my team. I'm going.
Yeah.
But it's not. I haven't been born and raised, you know, that way. So I was really hoping he didn't call me on any Eagle Nation stuff, you know, like
right. You need to do like a little backstory.
Yeah, I need to look in real quick before we started talking football. But it was really cool to see because he's so into them, and they did become my team. I mean, the fact that I got to wrestle right there on the 50-yard line in the biggest match of my life, and
the
WWE's biggest event ever, and that I'm linked to that stadium and that franchise.
I'll allow the 7
Thank you.
Favorite.
Thank
teams.
You, thank you.
You know, it's funny you're talking about Dusty having all this old stuff. There are all these pockets of wrestling happening in all these different ways in the 70s and 80s. And like, even you think like Jerry Lawler is just huge in Memphis, right? And that specific area, he's a god. And your dad's a god and like basically the entire South.
Yeah.
But then when we did the Vince doc, one of the revelations, and I thought I knew most of the stuff at this point, but the revelation that Vince was choosing between Dusty and Hulk and wanted Dusty first, and Dusty didn't want to go. And you were interviewed in the doc. You talked about it, but
shocked me.
It's a pretty fascinating sliding doors.
Yeah.
Do you think Dusty? I talked about this with Shoemaker, ironically, after Hulk died on my podcast, and we were talking about the three things that basically needed to happen for WWE to blow up, which was cable TV, Vince getting aggressive, trying to beat everybody else, but then Hogan.
Yeah.
Does it happen with Dusty? You think?
Gosh, I feel like
the only thing I could think against him is the accent.
So one of the things that Vince actually told me, I didn't believe the story when my dad told me the story. Again,
well, like, and then wrestling lore, you I never know what to believe.
Yeah, my dad no idea. Telling me he was slotted for the spot, walked out of the hotel room, never came back because Vince had booked recording studio time. They were going to make an album with Dusty.
Wow.
All right. I thought this is complete dad's nonsense. Years later, Vince tells me the exact story, tells me how mad he was. Dusty walked out of the hotel room on me, and I'm thinking, what? He really was in line to do it. However, part of the story, he didn't say it in a mean-spirited way. He said, but it worked out better that I got Hulk and that your dad got to go do Jim Crockett Promotions, help build WCW up from the NWA, him and Rick and everyone, of course, involved and all the great talented people they had. I think it worked out better. I don't know the answer to that, but I think Hogan was more of the now than maybe.
I think he made more sense with the Stallone, Schwarzenegger kind of.
That era.
Let's fight. Yeah. Let's have these superheroes that basically fight the villains. He just made more sense.
I think a lot of it, you could literally chalk it up to Dusty's subverting your expectations with his look.
Yeah.
Was one thing. But the look at the time and where it was going, especially if you look at the AWA, which most people don't realize, Hulkamania and St. Paul at the AWA was happening. So I think it was probably the right call. Dusty had a different delivery, a different way of talking people in, and Hogan was Stallone, Arnold.
And Dusty
Hogan
was a little at the tail end also, of his prime, right?
He had beat himself up. He was moving through. Dusty's real prime is there's very, very little footage of his real, not prime, but his hottest stuff is Florida. Championship Wrestling from Florida with
like early mid-70s?
Yeah, Soley and Pac Song and Harley coming in. And that was unbelievable. I mean, they were scalping tickets. This is Tampa's main sport was really Championship Wrestling from Florida at this brief onset with the Armory and the Grams.
So funny.
It's crazy. And
the only way you would know it was even happening was the wrestling magazines, which of course I was always going through in the newsstands.
Oh, yeah.
And they would just have these little articles or photos and that was it. There was no video.
I also think too, Dad was really proud of the three in the garden with Superstar. I think he wanted to walk off on the three. I did the three in a city I thought would eat me up, you know, chew me up and spit me out in New York. And they loved me and they took me. I'm good. I'm not going to overstay my welcome. I think he was, when Florida would make those trades, Eddie Graham would make trades with Vince Sr.
I love when they used to do that. Where they were just like, I'll send you, just make sure he doesn't get pinned.
Send such and such. Do whatever you want. Just make sure he leaves with the title or whatever it may be. They had that trust, Vince Sr. and Eddie Graham. And I just thought he probably looked at it because he was so proud of those three. I knew about those three matches before I knew about many things with him because that moment with him.
Is there a video of those or no?
MSG? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think there is. I remember seeing at least one of them.
Yeah. The first one, and I think the bull rope is on there too. The ropes are loose as hell. Superstars flying all over the place.
I can't believe how much video there is of the 70s and 80s now.
Yeah.
Like, my whole childhood is on there, basically. But stuff you just assume would just disappear and you never even know about it again.
Those garden ones are fun to watch.
One of the things that was amazing with him was how athletic he was, your dad. Like, he was, like, the most deceiving athlete. I wonder, like, what other... Did he play sports in high school?
Played everything. And I remember I got really hot at... There was another wrestler who was... He did this interview, and he'll never know this, because he did this interview years ago where he was like, you know, it's not like Dusty was some sort of athlete. And I wanted to explain to him, like, buddy, the whole point was he was an athlete. He didn't look like one and he could do a standing drop kick. He was the best basketball player I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he just seemed exceptionally coordinated.
He was just, he didn't look it.
Isn't there a video of him playing basketball?
Yeah, so
there's some charity game or something, right? And he looks like, he's like Charles Barkley, flying by everybody.
Charlotte Police Department. And if you ask...
it's amazing.
You ask like Lex Luger or Sting, who are both in it, just running up and down the
Lex
court.
Lex Luger, just a lot of like post-ups where he's just ball hogging.
If you ask him about it, he said that Dusty had a meeting before where he said, if we lose to the police, you're all fired. And then they just went for it. And all these just shots. It was a real bummer that video exists, and here's why. Fanatics, who WWE and Fanatics have this great partnership, right? They had me do the Fanatics Fest physical events.
Oh, no.
On the same day, I'm doing a signing and photo ops and stuff like that. And to me, when you meet the fans, it's the coolest thing on earth. It's my favorite thing. I could do it all day long. If I complain about getting up early, by the end of it, I'm the happiest I've ever
been. I already feel the excuse coming. Oh, I'm just...
It's the excuse. Right, you just heard
ready.
It. I go out on the one I was worried about was basketball, because I'm thinking like, well, there's footage everywhere today. There's footage of everything in every corner. I'm in my suit and I'm thinking...
Suit's a disaster.
I'm not going to not try though.
The suit's tough.
I can't say I didn't try. I kind of tried. I didn't not like just phone it. Yeah. And I miss every single shot.
That's where you blame the pectoral.
I just
don't have the same motion yet.
I was legit like hot at WWE Talent Relations for a minute because the wrestler out there who they already think isn't athletic looks, you can't do that to me. And I never said any of this because all of this is my fault. I made like one great like slap shot, hockey shot, which nobody got footage of. Did terrible in the football skills, golf skills bombed, but basketball where they're seeing all these clips of Dusty just float like a butterfly and these beautiful layups and this jumper he had.
That's hilarious. Then
I'm out there and it looks like my legs don't, like it's so bad. And the guy, the MC is going, all right, okay. Let's get up for Cody. Let's get him one. And it's so like, I couldn't get in there. It was so bad. Yeah. But yeah, Dusty was a deceivingly good athlete.
Did he save a lot of his stuff? Cause you mentioned like you had the journals. Do you have like this?
I have a
war chest of things from his
I have
career?
A team for the Charter Oak Buffaloes, the Patriots. He went to camp. So
oh, you have even going back there.
Yeah, he's oh got. God. So I've got a program from Patriots where he's listed on the team. Actually, I've got a lot of his baseball stuff because baseball was his better sport. And my nephew now, Kellen, is kind of following that baseball journey, and he's got skills from his dad and pops as well. So
what about the stuff from the 70s and 80s
in terms of his wrestling stuff?
Yeah,
because
nobody ever, people just threw that shit out back then. They didn't think to keep it.
I have a lot of stuff. I'm trying to think if we got real good from the 70s. I think the favorite thing I have is a photo album. The photo album was a personal photo album. So it's like him and Dick Murdoch on the boat.
Oh, wow.
Going from Victoria to, you know, Vancouver. And then there's Hogan just randomly in the background as a young wrestler it's these really fun, him, Ric Flair, when Ric Flair wanted to be Ramblin' Ricky Rhodes, when he was just breaking in the business, and I don't know if you ever saw Flair in the 70s, pre the back end.
Oh,
he's
huge.
He doesn't even look like the Nature Boy at all. So those photos I have. We've got some reels, stuff like that. Anything that I find really valuable, I actually will send to Ben Brown at WWE, who's the archivist.
Yeah.
Because it's sitting in my basement. It's better that I could always get it back. I just want, it's better that somebody takes care of it. Because if you go to the warehouse in Stanford, I mean, they've got...
Oh, they have like a 7 Hall of Fames in there.
Right. And the things you don't know are valuable. You open up and it's Pat Patterson's booking journals. Like, this is the most valuable thing in here, guys. It's in the corner. You know, just there's some real special stuff.
I remember when we did the Andre thing, they brought us back and it was like, here's Andre's shorts from wrestling. And you're like, ah.
I got a good Andre one.
Okay.
I can't confirm or deny that Dusty was ever the Midnight Rider. I should preface it with that. But if he was the Midnight Rider, the Midnight Rider, as a ruse to get people off his scent, other Midnight Riders would show up. Hey, I know it's you, Dusty. And then the next thing you know, there'd be Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Or someone who looks like him wearing the Midnight Rider. Oh, it can't be Dusty.
Right.
This isn't the guy who's been winning these matches. So when I was younger, I went downstairs and I put on a Midnight Rider mask in my basement and it was the size of this, this table. And I remember as a kid thinking, oh, that's what my head will be that big when I grow up, not realizing that that was an oversized Andre the Giant's Midnight Rider mask. Yeah.
His size 8 3/4 head.
Unreal.
Or whatever it was.
Unreal. Cause my sister has more memories with him than I do with Andre. Cause him and Dusty were pretty close, but that's one that, I mean, when everyone describes him, the type of giant he was a real giant, that's for sure.
Jedes Business hat Ambitionen und PayPal Open ist die Plattform, um sie wahr werden zu lassen. So können Sie als HändlerInnen bezahlt werden, wie Ihre Kundschaft es möchte. Und egal wo, online, im Laden oder unterwegs – Und wenn es Zeit ist zu wachsen, bietet PayPal ein Netzwerk aus Hunderten von Millionen PayPal-NutzerInnen weltweit und schnelle Finanzierungsoptionen und Tools, damit sie ganz locker expandieren können. Das ist PayPal Open, eine Plattform für alle Arten von Business. Erfahren Sie mehr auf paypalopen.de.
You know. So you come in WWE, you're there for like, I don't know, 9, 10 years.
Yeah, 2007.
And then they trap you with the Stardust gimmick. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows all these stories at this point. But did you start feeling like this ain't happening for me? Or were you thinking, this is going to happen for me and I'm in the wrong spot and I need to fix and solve this?
Man, it's a kind of...
Because I remember the Stardust part. I was like, oh man, I don't know if this one's going to work.
I think I took pride in the first like 6 months, year, which it should have only lasted 6 months, a year. I think I took pride in, hey, this is like the wrestler opportunity to make the most of something. The classic, okay, you got chicken shit, you're going to turn it into chicken salad. The classic, every wrestler who was ever good took the thing and ran with it. You know, Polka Dots is a great example on the old man. I think I took pride in the beginning, and then it still felt like a thing that, oh no, I'm locked out.
You know, start looking at the roster and going, all right, that guy, I'm not getting by him.
I had a list of all the roster of the show I was on. And like next to Dolph Ziggler's name, I remember I wrote abs. I had these, it was a list of things that I thought all these guys are better than me.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize the worst thing I was doing was competing with those guys was not the answer. I was feeling sorry for myself, super pity party all the time. I was losing my relationship with people who I had worked with years prior. I had wrestled Triple H at a SummerSlam as part of Legacy. And now we can't even get two words between each other backstage. I was really just kind of developing into a bad apple. And no doubt the booking was terrible.
Oh, bad chemistry guy.
Yeah. But so everything was going bad. And I think I even wrote it. I was starting to hate a place that I loved. And maybe the most mature thing I could do was I'm going to leave and hold on to the good stuff here. No doubt there's plenty of, the booking is terrible. There's plenty of issues here, but also I'm not helping myself at all. I'm becoming the worst me. As I get older, I take more and more of it on me than I do put it on, you know, Vince or Hunter or whomever. I try to put more on me about it. But I think the thing that bummed me out the most was I talked to my dad every day.
Yeah.
And I told you, he babied me and thought I was just so good. And I had a great, you know, athletic career growing up as an amateur wrestler. And he just saw things in me that I guess I didn't see. And that was the thing I was most ashamed of, was that happened and then he died. So my dad didn't get to do any of the good stuff for his dad. Virgil Sr., the plumber, you know, he passed away before the American Dream had took over and really even got a good start. I think he'd had a couple matches and getting beat up by Fritz in Texas and stuff like that, but he hadn't had his run yet, or even a first run, whatever it may be. That's the thing that bummed me out the most, is I wanted to give my dad the WWE championship. There's nothing fake about that story and that quest. This was the thing you didn't get. I'm going to be the one to get it for you and we can have it. And to this day, I still feel like immense shame over, he just missed everything. Like I couldn't get out of that spot. I felt trapped. I was trapping myself. God bless Brandy for putting up with me during that period of time. And I needed to get out. I've heard Nick Khan say it before. I had to go away to come back and be seen as an adult. And I don't know if I see it that way. But there's certainly some truth to that. I was a kid when I started there. I was 20 years old when WWE hired me. And
Sometimes you have to think outside the box when you're on your own.
Well, it was all...
I felt that way, by the way, when I got my... I left this... Yeah. Where's the Boston Herald? There, over there.
Yeah.
When I left that place, I had to figure out how to write a column.
Yeah.
And I'm just on my own. I just kind of had to... But it made me better. It made me ready for the next thing. You probably had some of that.
Well, you bet on yourself.
But you also had the... You have to start thinking like you're booking everything. You're figuring out everything. There's a strategy piece that you probably hadn't really considered before.
I used to strategize in my mind. And the thing I'd always find myself saying, and I hate saying this, but this is during Stardust, I'd always find myself saying, I'm smarter than these people. I'm smarter than this. Why can't I get out of this? All of these guys taught me stuff. I worked with them all.
Yeah.
On a peer level, they taught me stuff and I can't, somehow none of it's working. I can't. So I, when I left it, it became this kind of amalgamation of all the things I'd learned from Dusty, from John, from Randy, from Hunter, from Sean, from Undertaker, all these guys who I'd wrestled. And in the end, it's kind of like you're talking about figuring out writing this column. In the end, I feel like it had to be me.
It just clicked.
Yeah. Maybe it was all that help. Maybe it was all the feedback finally come to one, but in the end, it has to be my voice. It has to be what I want to do.
You needed some momentum too. That wasn't just, this is the Rhodes kid.
But
you created your own thing.
Yeah.
It was really cool and different. You bet on yourself.
Yeah.
The promotion you had felt different than WWE in like these little different ways. And then, you know, it just was a home run. Nobody had really challenged the WWE like that. And 20 years?
No. Since the doors closing on WCW.
Yeah, but that was like, that was a, and that challenge that was a walking corpse for 3 years.
Exactly. WCW. Very short lived in a sense. And for me, I was very almost volatile in how I came at it. I had love and reverence.
You were like, this is my one chance.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
Right. I had love and I had reverence for WWE. This is the house that built me. But man, I really wanted, I woke up every day thinking, I want them to know what I could have done. I want them to know what I could have done, which is why it's fun to talk about now, because they came back and got me. Which wasn't on my, that was never part of the master plan. Sometimes when people look at him, be like, oh, he always was going back.
And Nick Khan was always talking about it. He would tell like the freaking gardener, I'm getting Cody in a year.
Yeah, no, I kept making it appear that I had a plan. Had a plan, but really I wanted to make as much noise and disrupt as much as I could. And I can't ever think of anything, because I was talking about the two things and momentum and all that in the beginning. I found some of the best people around me who were feeling the underground elements of that. And really, like the three that I'd always cite and I'd feel uncomfortable if I didn't, Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega. That group, and Kevin Owens, God bless him, he's probably going to hear this pod. He's responsible for it because he linked us all together. And that connection of my name and my equity and their skills and their moxie and the drive and just that anger that I had and what they had, all of that just set up a situation that couldn't fail. And also at the time, Triple H doesn't realize he's a big part of this, because at NXT, he's bringing in every good hot gun off the independents.
Yeah.
So it's not about legacies. It's not about tenure at WWE anymore. It's about who has the hot hand. So it was a matter of like, I'm going to be the hot hand. And I don't know if I'm going to come back with it. What are we going to do? And, you know, we're off to the races with it at that point. But that was a really huge part of all the skills I had combined with really great people around me, really great timing, great timing.
And you never really talked about leaving AEW. But,
yeah.
But it felt like...
It's locked behind a paywall.
Yeah, apparently it is. but did you feel like that had a shelf life, or was there a moment during that run where you felt like, this was home, you're going to be one of the building blocks of this, and that was going to be the rest of your life?
Gosh, it's hard to kind of put myself in that spot again. But I started to get a sense. You know, Michael Hayes is really famous for always leave the territory at your hottest. I started to get a sense that all wrestling needs change. Guys are going to go from company to company. You got to keep it fresh. Guys are going to go down for a minute. Then they're going to come, whatever it may be. I just got the sense that it might be time for me to move into something else. And I didn't know what that was. I remember thinking, oh, that'd be crazy to be part of the Royal Rumble, to come home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've made another home. I got kids at this home, basically. I got a lot, you know, but to show everybody, because the first meeting I have with Vince and Bruce Pritchard, I didn't think I was coming back.
Yeah.
I was excited to go to that meeting to say, and this is going to sound crazy, I wanted to tell them both, thank you. I left on crazy bad terms. No one can ever leave like I left because of how I left. I didn't even sign my release papers. Like Chris probably could sue me over, you know, like I was, I left in a terrible place. They let it happen because of probably more respect for my dad than anything. And then I went out and I fought so hard and filled with rage. I mean, I'm smashing the throne. I'm bleeding. I'm setting myself on fire. I was just I don't know, going through it and living it out for everyone who was watching. But I wanted to tell them both, thanks. You guys helped build me and train me. And I took all those skills and I took them everywhere I went. I took them to every company, to every independent, to every, I got to reinvent myself on how I wanted to be here in WWE. I got to be that outside. And that's all I thought it was going to be, a sense of closure, a real sense of thank you so much for lessons I never got to thank you for. And then it turned into be something else by the end of that meeting. But, you know,
was the fear like 2022 at AEW is going to 2024 is basically going to be the same thing. And you're just running back years, but nothing, you're not elevating anymore. You're just kind of, you're kind of here. And you can't go here.
Gosh, I know that.
That was my perception from afar. No,
yeah. Nothing. And I feel like maybe that's a little bit of it. I think I started thinking about writing a book the other day. I've never even really considered writing a book, but we've done some fun stuff.
I think it would go well.
Right. The book. And I think that's I was thinking of what would I say? How would I put it? Because there's clearly bad blood, but there's also clearly respect and love. And in the end, the way I kind of see it is if I felt disrespected ever at WWE, that's one thing. That's a company that was built. Look at this glass. You know, that's the Yankees. That's the flagship of it all. If I ever felt there, you know, I was a number on a sheet maybe. But feeling disrespected at something I built.
Yeah.
With my friends and with us that we built, feeling disrespected there, I wouldn't stand for it. And I think Brandy and I both, I'm so blessed to have her. It was one of those where it was, fuck it. Like, I did way more here than you think. And you're going to find out the moment I'm out the door. And I hate saying that with any sense of anger or rage, but I'm like the angriest person you're ever going to meet. I'm always...
I'd like to be in the top five.
Right.
So like, when you said that, I was thinking about when I left ESPN. I was like, okay, guys, you're going to say same thing. Like it made me so ready for the next thing.
To me, the greatest... I don't believe in like the cold-hearted, backstabby type of revenge. The greatest revenge on earth is success. And I felt like we were sitting on something wonderful, something great, a huge potentially with what I was doing with the American Nightmare as a bad guy, as a good guy, as something in between. We're sitting on something magic. And if I'm not going to do it in the house that I literally with Matt, Nick and Kenny built, then buddy, I'm going elsewhere. And every day I am so blessed that Bruce Pritchard, Nick and Triple H got me, Vince got me back because I get to live it out now. I get...
Well, you know what's funny, the way you laid it out? Because I watched the first couple episodes of Netflix has this big Cowboys documentary.
Oh, yeah.
That's coming. And it's about the Jerry Jones era. So okay. I made them send me a couple episodes because I want to watch it.
You get all the stuff, huh?
Well, I just badger
you get it
people.
All, man.
No, I just badger people. And I break them down eventually.
Yeah.
But the Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson thing, where Jimmy Johnson brings him in. He's building through the team through the draft. He's coaching it. He's doing everything. Yeah. And they have real success. They win. But at some point, there's a little bit of a schism. And the schism comes down to Jimmy Johnson be like, dude, you brought me here to do all this. Like, this is, let me do my thing. And Jerry, as they had more and more success, started to think he was a little more involved with the success than maybe he was. And just coincidentally reminded me of your situation, maybe.
I feel like
at AEW.
Probably similar. And if it hurts even more when you're tasked to do something, when somebody sees it with their own eyes, but then I don't look at any of it. I said I was really angry and rage. I don't look at any of it with really any negativity. And here's why. I got to be part of WWE again.
Right. It all worked out great.
And I got to be part of WWE. We're talking about Austin and we're talking about Hogan, two of the greatest ever to lace up their boots and draw people into the arenas. And every one of those records has been broken. And I got to be in the matches that broke those records. I got to stand across from Roman Reigns at 39. I got to do it again. I got the quarterback spot at a company where I was last in the combine. And I I am very grateful. That's why I have such trouble articulating. And that's why I want to write this book, because
it makes sense.
I'm very grateful for, hey, okay, this schism happened, but the outcome is I got to be with the biggest game in town. And not only did I get the spot, I got to show them I could do it, you know, cause what are we in now? Three years or four?
I'll say it more simply. Yeah. It was a good career move.
Good career move.
It really was.
Yeah, good career
Although
move.
You join and all hell's breaking loose with Vince, which I'm not going to put you in the position to talk about here. And then
you don't want to put my media training to a test?
Well, I just you're just, because when you do interviews like this, then people are like, why didn't you ask him about this? It's like, because you're going to give a shitty answer. Like nobody, neither of us want to talk about it. It is what it is.
Yeah, no.
You can Google it.
Well, sometimes you give a shitty answer and then somebody will ask a follow-up. And the next answer is even worse.
Right.
Like it just goes, it's just like, hey, there's no answer here, you know?
It's, Vince was there almost 50 years and now he's not.
Yeah.
And we all know what happened.
Yeah.
But you have that and then you have you get hurt. So you it's like two things like, fuck, is this, and you start to think like, is this,
yeah,
my snake bit here? What's going on? And then everyone thinks you're going to win WrestleMania. You don't.
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of really smart in retrospect that you did.
Yeah.
I think that was well played.
You'll be the second person, but probably the first people ever hear this. I had Jelly Roll on my podcast recently. It hasn't come out, but I asked him what his most complete song was. I don't know why I thought that was a good question. I was like, you know, where you felt like you were checking every box, all your skills. And I told him my favorite match is WrestleMania 39, which is the one where it doesn't happen. And
it was really smart.
I probably would have been pumped to win. Certainly. But there's something about that night where things were happening in the arena the stadium that had never happened to me. He's got me in the guillotine choke.
Yeah.
And you hear these old timers, and God bless them, I love them, talk about, you know, just stay right there and the people will react and they'll, that's, when you've seen the amount of cool flips and awesome stuff, sometimes that seems like, I don't know, maybe that's not real anymore. And then in that moment, I remember I'm just slowly wiggling my head out and I can hear an entire stadium where the sound goes up, start to move. And I thought, oh man, they're into this. How blessed am I that they're into this? And it just, when it's that good, it feels completely real. Everything seems real. Roman is the greatest enemy of my life. And I'm trying to climb a mountain that's impossible to climb. And that just acoustic moment for me, it made it my favorite match of all time.
That's cool.
I couldn't tell anyone that though, because it was the saddest ending and then walking right in the back. But yeah, it's my favorite match.
Roman's a good example of somebody who had to eat some shit and it made him better. Dude, that's a great example of, I'm going to show you guys, oh, you think I got handed this or this was too early? Fuck you.
How many years of Roman where he was in the spot that he was getting booed? It was a couple, more than a couple. It was like three or four.
He wasn't quite ready yet.
So, but all that's happened.
But it helped him.
Right. And so this is when people today complain about Roman and, oh, he's barely ever there. He's paid so much. Whatever. I always think, guys, do you see what the run he had?
Yeah.
Who he went through, what he went through. There was probably nobody on earth equipped with it and had the will and drive like a Roman. So if he's decided, hey, I'm coming a few times, I'm going to look great, people are going to lose their mind, Superman punch spear, that's a gift to us. It's a gift when he shows up. I think people forget that he basically earned the right to call whatever shots he wants. I think very highly of...
He's great. He's great in the ring. He's great in person.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I've been to a lot of these now over the years. Presence is a thing that it's not a stat.
Yeah.
When somebody comes in and you can feel it, people either have it or they don't. He definitely has it.
Yeah.
And he had it even when they were trying to... Vince saw it, I think, pretty early. This guy has it and he was pushing him out. But I think ultimately, I think anybody who really makes it, you have to walk out to a 60 to 80,000 seat stadium and carry it somehow.
He's another
one. It's not just music.
Yeah, he's another one that reminds me of Dusty a little, in a sense that his athleticism is also that he could do a whole lot.
You're right. Undertaker is the all-time example, though.
Of athleticism?
Undertaker was like fucking Dr. J. Like when he would do the walking down the rope thing, how many people on the planet could do that?
And just the well, even harder thing is hook the top rope, fall backwards over, and land on his feet because he could never come off his feet.
But that early 90s...
Oh man.
Undertaker is out of control. One of the great athletes.
How you know is he's positioned as this monster zombie killer, what we would assume a heel.
Yeah.
And then, oh no, people love Undertaker. We're just putting him with bad guys. We don't have to make him a baby. Just put bad guys and the idea. And there's very few people who ever earn the respect that Undertaker has. And I came to a show at MSG, I think it was 14.
Yeah.
Goldust. Dustin was wrestling and he said, when I got there, he says, are you coming backstage? I said, I'd love to. He goes, well, I need you to meet Undertaker before you do that. So that was the thing. I said hello, and he's super nice. I'm 14.
Yeah, he was almost like the bouncer of the entire locker room,
bouncer,
right?
I always used to, because he's such a cowboy. To me, he was like the sheriff.
Yeah.
He's legit like the sheriff. So when he shows up at WrestleMania 40 in my match, for any like younger fan that's like, what? Undertaker? To me, it made perfect sense. Sheriff's coming in to even the odds, help out a good guy in need. It was just, he had more respect than most people I've ever seen in a locker room. I mean, to this day, he's such a great locker room leader.
More fun to be a bad guy or a good guy?
Everyone's going to tell you bad guy. But I think that's because they haven't experienced what good guy can really be. Bad guy is fun because you can fall on your face and make a spot out of it. Bad guy's fun. You can stumble on your words in a promo and make a moment out of it. Bad guy's fun because traditionally a bad guy leads the match. But a good guy or good girl that they are actually invested in, that they came, they're wearing your shirt, they've got signs. There's all this argument always about, oh, Cody turn heel. Will he turn? I don't think so. They can boo all they want if certain people decide like, yeah, Cody's a heel to me. But I don't think I'd ever turn because it's just too much of a connection with those who were on board with me.
I think it's harder to be a good guy.
So that's the thing. I think it's harder, but once we got
it's
on...
It's harder to pull it off, I guess I should say.
And for a while, they were extinct because they just wanted anti-heroes and social, like edgy social...
TV too. Yeah. TV and wrestling always marry each other
in
some ways.
Oh my gosh, yeah. An edgy social... Every heel out there has got the best social media and the best one-liners that leave most babyface like... dick in hand. Oh, what do I do? You know what I'm saying? Like, so you've got to be a really good baby face. You have to kind of rise above it. And that's very hard. Jey Uso, I look at as probably a great example, is most so popular. And it's not easy. It's not easy to make that connection with him. And I feel like it's even harder to keep it because baby faces get beat up a lot on TV. And to me, it's such a gift. I certainly,
You're selling the villains.
Yeah.
It's the first when, so Bob Backlund, when I got into wrestling, champ.
Yeah.
He was champ for like 5 years.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And he was like the perfect guy for back then. Cause he was just the vessel to have all these awesome bad guys that they had there. Cause they had they had great villains. And, he was an all American guy and he had the crew cut. But it's hard to have runs like that. Cena did it forever. But even as it was happening, the crowd was like, he was polarizing in the moment.
It's funny today because like John for so long was booed in certain markets, cheered in others.
Yeah.
He really was so unique in the, you felt strongly about him. You weren't getting up and leaving. You were going to boo, you were going to cheer. Today, I feel like our attention spans are a little shorter. When they start booing a good guy, people think it's time for a, no. It's just
flip them. Yeah.
To me,
crowd turned.
Yeah. I just call it an away game. I always know too. I know when it's an away game. We're going into their arena tonight. It's an away game. Like wrestling John right now, heading into SummerSlam.
That freaking traitor.
Right.
What a jerk. Right.
So heading into SummerSlam.
How dare he kick you in the balls?
How dare? And then how dare he make a shirt for every city featuring every sports team and we have to celebrate the farewell while he's in this nefarious state of mind. That's why on SmackDown this past week,
how dare he sully his legacy?
Right. Well, so we talk about like what's real, what's not. I'll tell you something that's as real as it gets. Last week on SmackDown, give me carte blanche what I want to say in my promo. What I said in my promo was very simple. Just be the real John Cena. They're already happy for you. They already love you. You spent years building equity with them. I could care less. Stop. If you got to boo me, if you say, let's go Cody, Cody sucks. If you, I'm fine. Well, I'll take it. I got raised in the industry to be able to take it. But
yeah,
let's be you. If this is your last SummerSlam, come like it's your first. Be you, and then I don't have to stare at a sea of, nothing's weirder than you're my favorite wrestler. Somebody telling me you're my favorite wrestler when they're wearing the entire Cena uniform, the entire farewell. I'm like, all right, well,
yeah, thanks.
Didn't help me tonight, bud. But
yeah, thank you.
You know, so for me, I want him to be John, and I don't know, he's the most unique soul there is in the industry. So we'll see what we get.
That was way too magnanimous because that guy is a jerk. He sneak attacked you.
Right,
let you down. He let down all the
Travis Scott
fans.
That whole
Travis Scott kind of, he took some liberties, didn't he?
No. Travis Scott, I feel like if you're a wrestler and you can't take getting slapped in the face, you're not that great a wrestler.
Okay.
However, the mark just looked really bad. So it was one of those where I couldn't, the next few days, everybody's like, what happened?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. And there's a clear fan video of it just happens. It's just part of it.
Do you get mad that the Paul brother is actually good at wrestling? I think it's bad for wrestling. He just steps in and he's like immediately doing crazy moves. I don't know.
If he had just stepped in and could immediately be as good as he was, I'd be furious.
Could he put the work in?
Oh, one of the hardest working people I've ever seen. And the other thing is, really, if you consider him a heel, that's okay. Because the guy is a complete, like you keep saying, jerk. Logan is as prickly as it gets.
Yeah.
However, his story of doing the work is as accurate as it gets. And his secret weapon is Shane Helms. Shane Helms, who's a producer at WWE, they're attached at the hip. They're talking wrestling. They're training wrestling. Mm. He took it as seriously as anybody ever. I have a feeling
he's good.
He's going to end up being world champion or WWE champion at some point, and the internet will explode and we'll all be fine. We're going to be okay, but he is very special. As legitimate as a prick as you could meet, though, in a sense, like, oh, this is
it. This guy needs a slap.
Cheers to this, but I love having him on the team. He is as valuable. I mean, he is a massive asset to WWE. Going to be a future champion for sure.
What's the maddest you've ever been in the ring at somebody as you guys were going back and forth and it got actually, in a way, where you're like, I'm going to actually fight this guy after we're done?
Maddest I've ever been?
Have you had one? Because they did this. They covered this on Unreal where it got a little testy with Charlotte and what's her face? I'm blanking. Who did she wrestle? Tiffany, when it kind of went back and forth, and it got to a point where Triple H actually had to get mad at them on the show.
Is that
in the show?
Is it Unreal or is it?
That's an Unreal.
Kind of from a conspiracy level. What do you think?
I don't know. Conspiracy Bill bought all
total real.
It seemed relatively real.
Brett Sean, like where do you put it? It was real. You're saying?
Seemed mostly real.
Okay. Mine was
like an 8 out of 10 real.
8 out of 10 real. Yeah. Okay. Mine was not even in the ring. I did commentary. Me and my brother did commentary on a tag match as the Rhodes brothers.
Yeah.
And they had told JBL, and I don't know who the they is, but they had told JBL to eat me up on commentary. And he did. And
it was like a roast?
It was not even like a roast. I remember he asked me a question. I said, I replied with, honestly, I'm about to make my answer. He goes, no, I want you to lie to me. And then he just kept going. And I'm, again, nothing makes me feel weirder than when you're supposed to protect the good guy.
Yeah.
But then also it's like, hey, if you don't know how to defend yourself, you're not going to be that good of a good guy or whatever it may be. I learned a lot. JBL is one of my favorite people ever. But I remember that night, that's the most I've ever thought. Okay.
You just want to hit him over the head with something.
Well, I just wanted to explain, like, what's the point?
Right.
Are you and I wrestling?
Right.
Are we wrestling? Because if we are, that was great.
But so we're just not testing you.
Yeah. And he tested me and I'm okay with that test. And I failed that test. Now that I look back at it, I'm totally okay with that test. I'd probably want to test somebody too, but I failed that test, which again, as older I get, the more I start to put the impetus, like, I put it on me that these were my screw ups. I said I was ready and I couldn't handle JBL on commentary. Right. Maybe I wasn't ready.
How do you do, you don't have to name a name, but how do you do a program and plan out stuff with somebody you don't like? Like if you're doing a 6 week arc with somebody and you actually have to spend some behind the scenes time.
You do it with more love and commitment than you do with somebody you do like. You
interesting.
Yes.
So you, it's like fake friendship.
I mean, hey man,
how you doing?
But you
like hate the guy.
There's just a lot more of when you're talking, a lot more of this.
Mm.
So that you know I'm serious. He knows I'm so that. Because, okay, if you come backstage at Raw or SmackDown, you'll see wrestlers shake hands to a level that's like, what? Why? Why? You've shaken
hands? Yeah.
We've shaken hands 3 times. Why are we shaking hands? My trainer, Al Snow, I remember him asking me, he said, you know why we shake hands? Thought it was a simple answer. We respect each other. It's about respect. He goes, yeah, you know, that's one of it. He goes, the real reason, though, is we need each other. You're supposed to pick me up, slam me, look like you hate my guts, and want to murder me. I'm supposed to get up safely and we're supposed to do that the next night.
Well, and you're putting your life in somebody else's hands. You're
putting your life in someone else's hands. And WWE, I think, is more of a team-minded unit than I've ever seen before. There are plenty of people who dislike each other. There's plenty of people who he's great. Love him. But never has it been more uniform in terms of Hunter is really good. Hunter and Nick are really good about this is the direction. This is the direction. We're a team. We're all going. And that's not just the wrestlers. That's the whole company. Everybody gets on board with the team. So it's really, you just go at it with more love and commitment than you would if it was one of your buddies.
Okay.
One of your buddies, you can almost, like Jey Uso kicked my head off the other night on Raw. It was a replay of it. My whole face moves. It's like a boxing punch. I loved it, right?
Yeah.
But when you're working with someone that maybe there's not that trust and empathy and love with, then you go at it a little differently. But that makes great TV.
Who do you think is next generation below you? So I'm going to say in the 24 to 29 year old range.
To look out for?
Who do you have your eye on? Anybody?
There's so many guys.
I think Rhea Ripley's incredible.
Unreal, huh? And not to plug the...
I really like in person.
Yeah.
Probably the most presence of any female wrestler I've seen. And also really talented. I don't know how old she is.
I think Rhea, well, that's good.
She's probably in her prime though.
That's good. She's in wrestler prime. I think Rhea is.
But there's no younger one where you're like, whoa.
Oh my gosh, there's more women training to get it in the business than there are men.
Yeah.
So right now at the Nightmare Factory, my school, all my favorite students, I'm waiting for a guy to come along and finally have the skills, you know? I'm trying to think of a young up-and-comer at WWE because there are many.
Because there's probably some NXT stuff, right?
Dominic Mysterio will end up becoming a massive... He already is. But Dom has a connection with the audience and the work is coming. It's kind of reverse. The work is coming. But
he gets heat. I got to say, you can feel it in the crowd.
He also works with people that are really... His father's the greatest example.
Yeah.
When you are around people like that, you learn things that no one can teach you. Right. And other than someone who is, I don't want to use the over word, but somebody who's extremely popular, someone who's over. So Dom is someone definitely to look out for, in terms of specialness. My gosh. And then there's just if you look at NXT, Oba, who's coming up, Oba's really special. Ricky Saints, Ethan Page, he's another one that if you meet Ethan Page, he could be 50 or he could be 25. He's got a really unbelievable skill set. That's what I like the most about the WWE currently is that if someone was to move to go, we've got people ready. Now it's going to take time. We're talking about Roman, takes time and takes years. My dad used to say it takes 2 years for a guy to really connect with the audience. Cena will tell you it takes 5 years for a guy to connect with the audience.
Jerk.
Yeah, right? So that bastard. I think we've got a lot of, Sean's really trained a lot of people really right, but there's a lot.
So Sean was your guy. He was your favorite?
I've talked about him way more on this podcast. He was my favorite growing up. Yeah.
Because I went to the Boston Garden WrestleMania when Tyson was the referee.
Oh, he's sick.
And Sean had like basically a broken back. And they did the match.
Yeah.
And he sells it. He does you wouldn't really know. You knew he wasn't 100%, but you wouldn't really know. The match ended. It went dark.
But did you know he was 100%?
Hunter had to carry him off.
Yeah. Did you know he was 100%? Or was that the story going around the building that day?
Are you conspiracy billing me again?
I think he's the best in the business at giving you something else. I just said, he was sick. Because my dad on the couch behind me, I heard the kid's really sick and he's pale and he's backstage And they show him, I think it's him, Hunter, and China. They're all walking. And then he goes out there and he looks super pissed off. He's also throwing his head into the steel steps with that weird toxic grit we were talking about. He might have had a bad back. He did. I mean, he clearly had a broken back.
He disappeared for like 2 years.
He might have had all those things. He might have had, I think it was bronchitis was the rumor going around in my home. Or he might have just been Shawn Michaels. And creating magic out of magic.
Wow, look at you. Unreal.
I'm telling you.
You're really giving us the unreal.
That's why if any fan is worried about unreal, the work within the work. Chris Van Bleet, who's a wrestling podcast guy, he asked me one time the scariest question anyone's ever asked me in a podcast. And I didn't know how to answer it. He said, you seem like you're always in character. You're always wrestling. You're always talking. He goes, are you ever not? And in the moment I realized, oh.
No, I think you're really like this.
I think I am too, but I might be too deep in. Andrew Schultz, I do his podcast and he's like, oh, he's just wrestler talking. And I'm thinking, am I? I don't know. I've grew up in this. It's so hard for me in turn to determine like, where are we at with all this? So yeah, that was a scary question.
That was the weird thing. I remember Hunter came in. He's so many names. What do we call him? Paul, Triple H, Hunter. Like, what do we go with?
I think it's the worst choice. I say Hunter.
Yeah.
But then I hear others say Paul, but I don't know him as a Paul. And then I hear people like, hey, Trips. And I don't think I'm cool enough to hit him with a
Trips.
Hey, Trips.
Trips is.
I don't know. Yeah. So, but yeah, I say
like
Hunter.
When Magic Johnson's teammates called him Buck. Like, he had like this extra nickname that it was like a special nightclub for the nickname.
I just say Hunter.
Yeah, he came in to see us like when I was at ESPN. Grant, we did a pod.
Yeah.
And just being around and watching like the different version of him, I was like, oh, I think this is probably who he actually is. Like the low, soft spoken, kind of intense guy.
Yeah.
But then you see him in wrestling, he's a completely different human. You seem like you're around the same at all times.
I mean, I'm a big fan of his. When I left, I was doing things to, I tried to steal a lot of his playbook in terms of the EVP role, for example. I've modeled a lot of stuff after Hunter, but I find it, if I don't ever have the chance, this is a perfect chance to, he is probably one of the top three. He's one of the most important people in my professional life. And it's like, I didn't know he was until so recently.
Well, the first time you left, wasn't he like kind of shocked?
Yes.
It's like, really? Yeah.
He shocked. And he was one of the first people to text me when I won a world title outside of WWE. Hey, good job. He had no reason to be watching that show. And maybe just the fact that he kept tabs on me, but all that kind of shame I had over not being able to have this run that I've been so blessed to have that my dad never saw. I do take some solace in the fact that I get to be around Hunter.
Yeah.
Because they were tight. So, you know, if my dad was to wake up and walk in the room and see Hunter and I hold my hand up at WrestleMania or at these press events or things of that nature, there's something special about that. I don't know if it was destiny or what, but Hunter's been extremely, I watch him at all times almost. Because I love how he operates at WWE. I love how he runs the team. And, you know, part of me inside wouldn't mind another shot at, I'd love to try behind the scenes stuff, right?
Well, if you get behind the scenes again, I'm just, the two championship belts are too confusing.
So like a world title.
The heavyweight championship and then the world, it's like just, we need to call one of them like the WCW belt. Just like make it easier in my head.
You need one title, huh?
I like, you know, the old days when it was the WWF title and the Intercontinental title, and we had the two titles.
You're not wrong. Do you know the reason why two titles? It's not wrestlers and it's not the booking. You know why we have to have those?
For the two different shows.
For the
right?
two different shows. It's them. It's their fault. It's that. We want the champion on our show. All right. Well, this is that champion, and then
But can you imagine if the NBA did this, where it's like, Oklahoma City won the title, but what's the thing they do in Vegas?
The
Commissioner Cup. Cup was elevated. It was the same level. And it's like, there's the Commissioner Cup title, the Milwaukee Bucks.
I'll say one thing about the two titles that helps us, though, is the guy who's wearing the world title and the guy who's wearing the WWE title always are looking at each other of the thought, like, I'm better than you. or I want to be better than you. I want to. And when you get to a live event, like say you're just doing a non-televised live event, well, who's on last? Right. That's the, so there's a, again, the real competition that sits underneath.
Day one, day two, because SummerSlam's 2 days.
Yeah.
So what's the better day? Because like when I went to WrestleMania, I went to day one. Day two's the prestigious day, right? Or does it,
they both, both have, days?
So though? They both are technically main events. So that's not a lie when we say, oh, WrestleMania main event.
Which day would you rather be on?
Sunday.
Okay.
And that's just, again, back to old school wrestler, toxic. I want to be the last thing they see before they go home. And
well, I like the 2 day thing because I went to the famous with my son, the New York WrestleMania. That was, I think I'm still there actually. I don't,
the really
I think
long
I
one?
Died. Yeah, the one that was like 7+ hours.
Is this MetLife?
I actually think I'm there still right now.
Yeah, those, well, that's why we have two nights.
Yeah.
And
that was the longest day of my life. My son, of course, loved it, didn't pee once and was locked in.
He was locked in.
Locked in.
Well, also, I love it. He didn't pee one time. He was in.
Didn't pee. Didn't want to miss one thing.
Night one, there is a, if a wrestler's told you on night one, often they might say one thing outwardly, but inwardly, night one is a huge opportunity. Because the crowd is prime.
Yeah.
It's prime. And I feel like it makes it so that night two, if you're a night two guy, it's a lot harder now. Bar's been set. We just saw how you're going to. And then when a good night one guy ends up on night two, they're in the same position. So there's a beauty to night one as well. Right. There really is. I like, so I've had 4 WrestleMania main events. My mom only would say it's 3 because she doesn't count night one. But she's not.
Oh, interesting.
I count night
tough
one.
Tough critic.
So, yeah. Well, she's as tough as they get. She's. I mean, she grew up around Andre the Giant and Dusty Rhodes. So very little I've ever done has impressed her. But when I can get her, it's pretty solid.
So you
it's
need
pretty
the,
solid.
But you need the title back.
It's funny when you're around someone who was around the business. My dad and married to him. The majority of his professional career and still says things like, I was sad you lost the title. I was sad. And then still ask you things like,
nice. You get carried around.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's great for moments like this.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Could have brought it today. You
bring
don't
it today.
Have it.
Everyone takes a picture with it. It's a whole thing. But it's sad though when she calls you, then, hey, how you doing? Well, good. Yeah. It's just, she's still, I guess, it's real to her, you know? That's hard
in
my family.
I think the worst
part
is losing the title, but then you have to figure out when's the right time to do the roll out of the ring.
Oh,
the walk of shame. It's like a roll of shame.
I yelled at somebody on my walk of shame. Somebody was telling me to go side ramp, which is also lovingly called by production loser's lane. I would rather take a $25,000 fine. Than right. ever walk side ramp.
Yeah,
I will
you gotta
walk
go main
up,
ramp.
I will walk up the ramp with my sad face.
Yeah,
and I will because I want to feel every bit of that.
The look back?
Depends.
The sad look back, wondering what happened.
I think sad look back sometimes that might be their moment. And if sad look back takes away from their moment, I just want to know that I walked down this thing, and I'm walking back up it. Now, win, lose, or draw. That's part of it. So many poor, it's never their fault. I apologize to them in advance. Okay. If you tell me to go side ramp, you're going to have to hold the show 30 seconds because I'm not going side ramp. It's as odd as that is, is where I draw the line. I will not be going side ramp, but that's all that moment is. It's their moment. You roll out, you know, and
we have to go because I kept you too long, but I did want to ask you why we just don't have more of them. And why it feels like the most unexplored terrain in wrestling. Like, why couldn't Shane Gillis do like a 3-month, he just starts managing somebody, getting involved, doing stuff on the mic. Like, what? How did we get away from this? Cyndi Lauper, way back when she got involved and did a little thing and it was really fun. I don't know why we're not messing around with this more.
I think managers, it's a great question. It boils down to nobody wants to train to be a, they don't want to be a manager anymore. For example, Bobby Heenan and J.J. Dillon, two of the greatest managers ever. Jimmy Hart, another outstanding. They trained. They could also be wrestlers. They could take a bump. They probably were referees at some point. They were everything.
Oh, so if you're a manager, you're going to at some point take a couple bumps.
Exactly. So today people will be like, well, how do I train to be a manager? You train to be a wrestler. And then maybe wrestling determines that you are a manager and that you can help build somebody up or help get heat for somebody or be a, like Bobby Heenan was, be a mouthpiece for somebody.
Don't forget about the smoking hot managers. I mean, Miss Elizabeth was an iconic 80s person.
Oh my gosh.
For all teenage boys.
I would love for there to be managers everywhere.
Just bring them back. Just experiment. During the dead part of the WWE schedule, I just feel like they should start trotting them out.
I'm really trying to think of an example of somebody who would be an outstanding manager. But I mean, so here's another reason why, and this is you're going to hate this answer, but this is a true answer why maybe there's no managers anymore.
Yeah.
It is hard to be a manager when Paul Heyman's on the show, because
he just blows everyone
he
away.
Is so much yeah. better than everyone.
But that tells me there should be more managers then.
Well, there should be someone trying. There should, you know, so when we had...
Paul Heyman's been involved in some of the best wrestling moments of all time.
Oh, and he's partly a mind behind some of these moments. But, right. You know, and then you had Cornette back in the day, who was such an outstanding manager for his guys and really helped. I just feel like more guys who get into wrestling schools and go to NXT or whatever, I don't be afraid to look into that. It doesn't mean it's the end. I mean,
when I was growing up, we had Blassie, we had Lou Albano, we had the Wizard, the Grand Wizard.
Grand
what was
Wizard,
that guy's name?
Yeah.
We had Jimmy Hart.
Yep.
There were some bad ones, but then there was Missy Hyatt was popping up
and you laid,
in Texas.
All those managers you just laid out were there for Macho. Who's going to be Macho's manager? And then instead of picking any of the greats, he picked Liz. I remember she walks in and it's shocking. He didn't go with the ones he had.
He had a great gimmick that's sitting there for somebody. I liked when you did your "I'm so handsome, don't touch my face."
Dashing Cody Rhodes.
I like that one. But I like the super rich. I think that's sitting there for somebody. The Million Dollar Man in 2025. That gimmick is just sitting there for somebody.
Here's what it would also take to get a good manager. You need a young talent who wants to take care of his manager. Because often it looks like the manager takes care of the talent on screen.
Yeah, the relationships, the
behind
seesaw
the scene
is
though.
Off.
You have to make sure your guy gets there. They're older at this point, you know, your guy gets there. Your guy's okay. He's happy in his life. He's happy to be on the road. I don't know if a lot of young guys are looking for that person that they could have.
Like
and
you're stuck. It's almost like getting a dog.
It's very much,
it's like, it's, fuck,
there's a dog element
I have
to
a
it.
Manager. I got to go everywhere with this guy.
But you, that's the thing. If it's going to work, you've got to go everywhere. It's like a tag team. If you and I become a tag team, well, then we have to drive to the show
together. Do you think people in the 80s felt that way? Like, fuck, I got Captain Lou Albano.
100%.
I got to fly with this guy. He hasn't showered in a week and a half.
Hunter talks about all the managers that Vince suggested that he hated.
Yeah.
And then ultimately they found China and that they were off and running. So it does have to be a good fit. You have to,
The rich guy manager or rich guy wrestler thing sitting there for somebody.
Logan Paul with a manager would be really good. Logan Paul would be really great with a manager.
Like a former hedge fund crypto guy who cashed out and now he just really
just
wants.
The word crypto amongst wrestling fans is we're booing. If I ever did a manager, I would have them I wouldn't speak. I'd have them speak. I would no longer speak anymore.
We've had a couple like Kane. There were a couple of wrestlers that just relied on the manager to talk.
Yeah, that's
them.
The other thing. That's a big question that there's a whole room of people like, well, this guy.
Oh, we forgot
promo.
About Slick. That was another manager.
That's. I think it's okay that you forgot about Slick. He's a great.
He was there.
No, Slick was a great. He was a great manager.
He had some good ones.
There's so many good managers.
Yeah,
and they
should come back.
Managers.
That's
also,
my big note.
It's a freebie in front of a live crowd. Oh, the manager gets tossed out. The ref gets to do this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's a freebie. That's a free reaction.
But the guest manager is great too. The Shane Gillis just popping in for 2 months, doing one back and forth promo where he's just roasting somebody, but then just kind of being around.
I think if you get a manager today who's a bad guy manager, the audience needs to let up a little bit on the cancel. They need to be able to get a little buck with it, get a little wild. Because if we're not able to get heat, then none of this works. Then it's just, we're all friends. Just, good guys wrestling, you know?
That shocked me. So I went to the Netflix LA in January.
Oh, yeah.
When Hogan came out and he got booed.
Yeah.
And he didn't read where the room was and flip, which I thought was I was like, oh, he's just too old now. Because in the old days, he would have read the room.
Yeah.
Been like, oh, the room's going this way. I'm going to zag and be like, how dare you guys, brother?
He powered through.
Yeah. Because The Rock's done that a couple of times where he's like, oh, the room's going there. All right. I'm just going to zag. which is like it's like wrestler ESP almost.
Right before he went out, Hogan and I, we had a conversation backstage, and he had Real American Beer. He was talking about the beer. He had a duffel bag, like a custom Real American Beer duffel bag with a bunch of beers in it. Mm. And I wanted to try one of them. I thought, oh, I do want to try one of Hulk's beers.
Yeah.
And I talked to him, and then he decided he was going to give me the whole duffel bag. So I had this whole refrigerated duffel bag, and because he was there with his son, Nick, and I'm so blessed that I got that moment, because I thought the beer was good. I thought the beer was good, but my bus driver, thankfully he's not driving, drinking these while driving, but that's his beer.
Wow.
And that bag is still on the bus. It wasn't like a thing that like some swag that didn't make it. That bag is his bag. That he's about it. So it was a nice gift I got from him, because I didn't know things were going to go like they did, but, yeah, I got the Real American Beer duffel bag.
What was the number one most starstruck you've been by a wrestler?
It might have been him when he came to WCW when I was a kid, because seeing him,
right?
I'd only ever seen him really on TV. Gosh, but I didn't get it. It's a real weird answer. The most starstruck and more scared I ever was. Oh man.
Dr. Isaac
Yankum? That guy was close. Oh, I say close, but
Shockmaster?
Harley Race. Shockmaster was married to my Aunt Bobby, so I wasn't scared of Shockmaster at all.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's, and Berkeley, this is just some fun lore for you guys. Berkeley, his son, is the beloved, we love Berkeley, is the timekeeper at ringside. He's been that for many years. Yeah, he's very good at his job.
So Harley Race.
Harley Race was the first. I felt like Harley Race, who was older and Vader's manager at the time, 7-time NWA world champion, I felt like he could still be NWA world champion. He looked like
Harley Race. There's a couple guys where you just feel like these are the guys you want on your side at a bar at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
I think he's like number one, right? They always used to talk about how he could kick everybody's ass in real life.
Himaku. I feel today like it's an easy choice if you're going into a bar fight. You hear all these creative answers. Like, I'm just going to take Chad Gable because he's a former Olympian alternate, and then any of the Samoans. We're winning the fight. We're going to, I don't have to even get up. Like, yeah, he got him. Oh, like one little fake kick at the end. Like, yeah. So
I think Undertaker probably had a 15-year run there
on the
90s, 2000s, where it's like that's your choice in the dark alley.
Yeah. I mean, you could get creative with it. There'd be some fun choices. But to me, some of these athletes I'm around, I'm like, just Chad Gable. Everyone's getting twisted up. And no, it's not going to be violent. He's just going to put them down in that uncomfortable, humbling type way,
Right.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
This was great.
This was so much fun.
Good luck. Good luck with that freaking turncoat jerk Cena.
I love how upset you are with him.
Well, he let down two generations of children.
I'll be upset if he doesn't show up like the John we all know and love. I'll be upset if we just get this.
Maybe he can come back to some sense of human normalcy. Well, the reality is shitting on his fan base.
John is a man of his word. The reality is 11 shows left. He might be that wrestler that like, oh yeah, it's going to, and he's gone. So,
well, if we've learned anything in the history of professional wrestling, it's that nobody ever actually retires. So I believe it when I see it.
And I think that one you will see. He might be the one person who is more serious than ever about it's time. You guys are,
unless there's some like Stone Cold, like had a neck injury, like he had to stop, if there's some sort of physical thing where it's like, you can't do this anymore. But for the most part, to walk away.
I don't even think we'll see John returning in cameo roles. I think this is it.
Wow.
Which is why at SummerSlam, I'm very excited, because as much as...
Well, maybe he should retire and think about some of the choices he made over the last year.
You tell him. You tell him,
Really letting down entire arenas of people.
Kids crying.
Really terrible.
Hit me with my watch, too.
Great to spend time with you in person. Thanks for doing this.
Bet on yourself, club.
Yeah.
We're in it.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks to Cody Rhodes. Thanks to Eduardo and Gahau as well. I'm maybe coming back on Sunday. I will definitely have a podcast over the next 7 days. Don't forget about rewatchables on Monday. And I will see you in a couple days. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. For Kansas, and affiliation with Kansas Star Casino, or 18 plus and present in D.C. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Call 1-888 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut or visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelpline.ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.